Okay. So let's call the meeting to order now. Thank you.
Commissioner Wickett.
Here.
Commissioner Bloom.
Here.
Commissioner Brennan.
Present.
Commissioner Sanchez.
Here.
Commissioner Schellenberger.
Here.
Commissioner Stone.
Here.
Chair Juan.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Okay. So, for the first half hour, we take public comment, and each member of the public is entitled to 3 minutes to speak on an agenda item that is not on today's agenda. And first person is Luke Wake.
Madam Chair, Honorable Commissioners, hello again. My name is Luke Wake. I am an attorney at the Pacific Legal Foundation, the nation's oldest and most successful public interest legal organization dedicated to the protection of property rights and the principles of small government. Today, I am here to offer a word of caution to the Coastal Commission and to the coastal landowners over whom you regulate. I am speaking of the Coastal Commission's Prescriptive Rights Program. The purpose of the Prescriptive Rights Program is to promote public access to the coast by means of researching historical public use of trails and other access points, and of documenting the public use. The aim is to gather evidence to support the legal conclusion that the public has acquired a prescriptive right to continue using these trails and access points. In California, the public acquires a prescriptive easement, allowing the public to continue using a property in the same manner as it has historically, when it is demonstrated in court that the public has openly used a property for 5 continuous and uninterrupted years without permission or objection from the owner. As such, and in light of the Commission's Prescriptive Rights Program, landowners are forced to continually be vigilant in order to protect their right to exclude the public by posting and maintaining no trespassing signs when necessary, or signs giving the public a revocable license to cross their property with the language set forth in Civil Code Section 1008. But I must encourage the Commission to take a temperate approach in promoting public access over private property. I should remind you that the Coastal Act charges the Commission with the duty of maximizing public access and public recreational opportunities in the coastal zone consistent with sound conservation principles and the constitutionally protected rights of property owners. As such, the Commission should be particularly careful to avoid any appearance of encouraging or condoning acts of trespass. Though the Commission is authorized to promote public access in the coastal zone where the public has a legitimate right of access, the Commission lacks the power to encourage private citizens to violate the rights of coastal landowners, even if this may ultimately result in the acquisition of new prescriptive rights for the public. Thus, I respectfully encourage this Commission to occasionally reevaluate its prescriptive rights program to be sure that it is not overstepping its charter. We would not want to see this program devolve into anything illegal. Thank you.
Question?
Sure. Go ahead.
Yes.
Sir, do you have any evidence that the Coastal Commission staff or anyone associated with the Coastal Commission has encouraged someone, as you're implicitly suggesting in your remarks?
We only have...
I think that's a yes or a no question.
And, no, and we no want evidence, to keep the meeting just going. Inquiries into and concerns from citizens as to the Commission's activities.
I would encourage you, if you do find evidence, that you advise Commission staff.
We would be happy to. Thank you, sir.
Lenny Roberts.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the Commission. I'm Lenny Roberts. I do have some slides to show. Thank you. I'm speaking for Committee for Green Foothills, and I wanted just to speak about a project that has been appealed to the Commission by several entities, including 5 environmental and community groups, 2 utility districts, and the Commission itself. Rather than discussing the issues in the appeals, however, I wanted to show you how the owners of this property, both now and previous owners, have attempted to eliminate some inconvenient wetlands on one of the sites. We can call it pre-development farming. The sites that are the Big Wave, two parcels, you can see on the slide, and this is looking north from the Pillar Point Harbor in the foreground. On the right is the Waterfront District of Princeton. The Pillar Point Marsh is in the center of the image, and it extends over to Airport Street, which you can see in the background, parallel to the Half Moon Bay Airport. Those two parcels in this image have been disked and plowed, as you can see, and this image was taken in 2005. Historically, there were more extensive wetlands on the southern parcel, the one closest to Princeton. An Army Corps, could you change the slide, please? Thank you. An Army Corps delineation done at, that's another view of the site from the air, and could we have the next slide there. This was the Army Corps delineation that was done in 1994 at the request of San Mateo County, which was considering purchasing some of the wetlands, or all of them, for addition to the Fitzgerald Marine Reserve. And so you can see on the right-hand area next to Airport Street and the upper part of the marsh, that there's a finger of wetlands that crosses that southern parcel, and that would seriously limit the extent of any development on this property. Even before the Army Corps delineation, you could show the next slide. This is the proposed development today, except it has been modified somewhat as it went through the county planning process, but you can see how it does constrain development. Even before the Army Corps delineation, previous owners attempted to destroy the wetland vegetation by disking and plowing the cattails and rushes. Could we have the next slide? This was done in 1987, and you can see the vegetation that has all been disked under and is still lying in the field. In between that time and today, the land lay fallow, but there was sporadic farming, and wetlands plants have recovered in between that sporadic farming. In 2005, if you have next slide, please, the owners of the property began disking and plowing the southern parcel again, and they brought in many truckloads over 2 or 3 days to add.
Wind up, because you're 3 minutes.
I'm done, okay. Well, could we have one more slide, please? They pioneered a road through the stream channel and the wetlands in between the two parcels, which is on County Parks property and within the commission's jurisdiction. Thank you very much. Just wanted to let you see some of the issues that you'll be hearing about.
Thank you.
Lisa Ketchum.
Madam Chair, is the timer working?
Yes, it's working up here.
We can't see it out here.
Ah, well.
Okay.
That's the issue.
That's an issue.
I'm Lisa Ketchum, and I also...
Why don't you wait until he gets this fixed?
Okay.
I can't tell what's out there.
No.
Still not? Where's our old timer? It worked.
Well, it worked stopwatch.
Until it broke. Until it broke, right.
There it is.
Yep.
There it
okay,
goes.
Okay, let's get this. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, why don't you state your name for the record and then go ahead.
Good morning. I'm Lisa Ketchum, and I also wanted to, I have some slides to show you, to give you a sense of place of this Big Wave project, the slides.
I'll hold your time till you get the slides on.
Viewed from Pillar Point Bluff Preserve and the California Coastal Trail, the Big Wave site lies between Pillar Point Marsh and the open farmed fields of the Half Moon Bay Airport, with Rancho Corral de Tierra extending beyond to the top of Montera Mountain. Next slide. The massive Big Wave project will intrude into this pristine view from the Harbor Beach Trail across Pillar Point Marsh north to Montera Mountain and Rancho Corral de Tierra Open Space Preserve. 46-foot tall buildings. Next slide. Story poles show a portion of the Wellness Center from Airport Street, which is the nearest road to the coast, and a bicycle thread of the California Coastal Trail. Pillar Point and the coastal bluffs would be blocked from view. Next slide. Big Wave Project story poles from Airport Street. The Wellness Center is with the big building on the left, and in the distance, two of the eight office park buildings. These tall, massive buildings, grossly out of scale with their surroundings, will destroy all sense of place along this coastal route. Next slide. Story poles for four of the eight proposed office buildings from Airport Street. The coastal bluffs are blocked from view. The single-story affordable housing community is dwarfed next door. Filling in the other four buildings will present a solid view-blocking wall. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Sabrina Brennan?
Hi, I'm Sabrina Brennan, and I live in Moss Beach in San Mateo County. On March 10th, residents of San Mateo County Coastside received robocalls and also a SMC alert, which warned them to evacuate the Coastside. That phone call came at, I think it was like 3 a.m, and residents responded to the alert by getting in their cars with their kids and evacuating Highway 1. And most people chose to take Highway 92 because Highway 92 is uphill, and the reaction I think a lot of people have when they live in a low-lying coastal area is to try to get up high. So people got in their cars and they drove up Highway 92 thinking that that would be a safer place. What happened on Highway 92 is there was a major traffic jam which stopped traffic for hours. People got out of their cars, they parked along the highway, there were kids running around near the highway. It was pretty hectic and hard to get through, especially for people that were trying to get to work. The tsunami evacuation route in San Mateo County is on Highway 1, and that's also our only road, really, our only access road in and out of the coast. So if Highway 1 gets backed up or blocked because of an emergency, then people really can't go anywhere in their cars. So I just wanted to point that out. Recently, the San Mateo County Board of Supervisors approved residential housing for people with physical and mental disabilities in the tsunami inundation zone, as well as a very large office complex. I'm concerned that the additional traffic from this project will increase traffic congestion in the event of an emergency, and I'm concerned that that hasn't been addressed. And I'm hoping that in future meetings here that those issues will come up. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. That completes public comment. We are going to have, before we go to the agenda, we are going to have a report from our Deputy Attorney General.
Good morning, Chair Juan and Commissioners. Yesterday, the Court of Appeal issued an unpublished decision in Norris versus California Coastal Commission, ruling in the Commission's favor on all issues. This case involved an enforcement order against Wild Cruise Playground for illegal development in the Santa Monica Mountains. Much of the controversy arose from a commission inspection of the property pursuant to a court order, which was cut short because the property owner had a film crew present and refused to stop filming. In yesterday's Court of Appeal decision, the court found that the search of the property did not violate the property owner's Fourth Amendment rights, that substantial evidence supported the commission's finding of Coastal Act violations, that the property owner received a fair hearing, and that commission staff is entitled to qualified immunity with respect to the civil rights claims. And Christina Arndt handled that case out of our Los Angeles office.
Very good, thank you.
Madam Chair, I might just remind you that this is the project that stimulated that film that really attacked the hatchet job on the commission that was called Sins of Commission. I never saw it, but I heard about it, and it's on the web, and it really distorts what this commission is about, and it was all centered around this particular case. So I think the result of the courts looking at what the commission staff did and the commission vindicates the commission's actions and affirms again that the commission acts in a fair and reasonable way under the law. That's what the courts have held here. So that's the law, that's the reality, not the sins of commission.
Thank you. With that, we'll go to the regular agendized items. The deputy director's report. Thank you.
Changes to the agenda.
Oh, yes. First, we need to do changes to the agenda.
Good morning, commissioners. There are six changes to the agenda today. The first is found on page number 7 of the agenda, item 7B, which is the permit amendment known as James and Joseph's Eye. That's moving to consent. The second change is also on page 7, which is item 8A, the revised findings for the Humboldt County LCP amendment dealing with the town of Samoa. That was postponed. On page 8, agenda item 15A, the application 5-08-199 Cohen. That's moving to consent. On page 8, item 16A, the permit amendment 5-11-20-A, Yu Sheng and Wu, that's moving to consent. On page 9, agenda item 21C, application 4-10-065 Tadros, that's moving to consent. And then finally, on page 10, item 21D, the application of the Santa Barbara County Flood Control District was postponed. And I'll also take this opportunity to remind anyone in the audience that if you'd like to speak to the commission today, it'll be necessary for you to fill out a speaker slip that you can find on the table at the front of the room and hand that to a staff person. The table also contains addenda for today's items and a binder with previously published and distributed staff reports. And finally, please turn off all cell phones or put them on a mode where they won't disrupt the meeting. So moving on to the North Coast portion of the agenda, there were three handouts that we distributed last night and in some cases this morning, including a pink addendum, which is the deputy director's report, a green addendum, which contains a total of 5 letters on item 7B, the James Joseph's Eye project, and there's a staff addendum for item 6.5A Lane, the new appeal. If any of the commissioners don't have these items, I have extra copies and can give them to you. The pink addendum contains 1 emergency permit and 1 immaterial permit amendment. The emergency permit was issued to the Wildlands Conservancy to repair a breached levee on Rust Creek within the Wildland Conservancy's Eel River Estuary Preserve in the Ferndale area at the mouth of the Eel River in Humboldt County. Due to high flows and heavy runoff, the levee breached, which caused the water in the channel to divert and caused the normal course of the channel to dewater, which is threatening the existence of federally protected tidewater gobies, and also the rerouting of the water has caused massive sedimentation of some freshwater ponds that are important for the tundra swan and other waterfowl. And so the executive director issued an emergency permit to allow the levee to be repaired in order to protect the endangered species in the environmentally sensitive habitat area. We're just bringing this to your attention at this time. There's no need for action today, but the applicant will be submitting a regular follow-up application that you'll be reviewing in the coming months. The other item in the pink addendum is an immaterial permit amendment for your consideration, and we're aware of no opposition or controversy involving this item, and we'd recommend that the commission concur with the executive director's determination to grant the immaterial amendment.
Any objection to finding concurrence? Seeing none, the commission has concurred.
Thank you. There is one item that I mentioned earlier has been moved to the consent calendar, which is item 7B, the permit amendment request known as James and Joseph's Eye. And for the benefit of anyone in the audience that's here for this item will now be heard as part of the consent calendar where the commission will hold a hearing simply on whether to approve the item as part of the consent calendar. If they were to pull it from the consent calendar, it would revert to its regular place on the agenda. This permit amendment would modify a permit granted for construction of an existing residence off of Pallet Drive in the town of Mendocino. The amendment would add about 1,200 square feet of living area and 665 square feet of garage. The principal issue involves ensuring protection of riparian Esha along Slaughterhouse Gulch, and there are special conditions in the staff recommendation that would require a deed restriction and certain mitigations to remove invasive plants and to protect the habitat. We do need to make one minor change to the language of special condition number 2 to clarify what's required. Special condition number 2 is the deed restriction requirement, and this is simply to clarify the mechanics of presenting the deed restriction. Right now, part B of that condition requires that a legal description and a graphic depiction of the area to be protected be submitted as part of the deed restriction for review and approval. We would simply change that to specify that the legal description must be a meets and bounds description and that the graphic depiction has to be drawn by a licensed surveyor. And that's simply because the configuration of the area is very irregular and it would be difficult to get it correctly identified. There are, as I mentioned earlier, a number of letters that have come in on this item. The green addendum contains 5 letters, all from neighbors, 3 in support and 2 opposed. The issues raised mainly present concerns over protection of private views, which are not protected in the under the LCP. And there's a second concern regarding consistency with the CC&Rs, which is not part of the standard of review. So that does not change our recommendation, and we're recommending that upon the close of the consent calendar, you approve the amendment request with the recommended special conditions as modified orally, as I just did. Thank you.
I have only one speaker slip on this, and they're available for questions. Can I get a motion on the consent calendar?
Move approval.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Sanchez, seconded by Commissioner Brennan. I didn't ask for ex parties. Any ex parties on any of the consent calendar items? Okay. Any objection to unanimous roll call? Seeing none, the consent calendar is approved.
That brings us to item 6A, which is the Mendocino County LCP amendment, MENMAJ1-08 Delamotte. This simply involves concurrence with the executive director's determination that the action of the county to accept the commission's certification of the amendment with a modification is legally adequate. The commission acted on this in February of 2010. The amendment basically rezones property from forest lands to timber production zone. The commission certified it with a mod that clarified that the one use, principal permitted use that is allowed under the zoning district is forest production and processing. All other development would require, would be appealable to the commission. The county accepted that modification in March and submitted the necessary ordinance for your review. We've looked at it, determined it's adequate, and we recommend that you concur with that determination that it's legally adequate.
Any ex parte communications? Any objection to finding concurrence? Seeing none, the commission has concurred.
That brings us to item 6.5A, which is actually on the addendum. This item is an appeal by Commissioner Stone and Sanchez of a decision of Mendocino County to grant a permit with conditions, excuse me, to Richard Lane and the Larry Spring Science Institute for the construction of a new approximately 3,000 square foot, 28 foot tall residence with a 792 square foot attached garage and appurtenant structures. The project's located on a 12.7 acre parcel on the, along the west side of Highway 1, approximately 2,000 feet north of the intersection of Ward Avenue and Highway 1 near Cleone in Mendocino County. As I noted, there is a staff addendum for this item. Staff is recommending that the commission determine that the appeal raises a substantial issue of conformance with the certified LCP. And if the commission found substantial issue, the commission would conduct a de novo review at a subsequent meeting. The appeal raised two primary contentions. One is that the development as approved by the county is inconsistent with the policies in the LCP for the protection of sand dunes and other ESHA. And secondly, that the project as approved is inconsistent with the policies regarding the protection of visual resources. The appellants essentially contend that there are feasible alternatives that were not examined to reduce impacts in both cases. We're recommending that all of these issues raise a substantial issue. The addendum that I mentioned supplements the portion of the report that lists the information needed for de novo review of the application should the commission find substantial issue. The additional information that's asked for relates to various information about house sizes so that the staff and the commission can evaluate the relative impact of the development on ESHA and visual resources and, if need be, to consider whether the project raises a takings concern. So in cases like this where staff is recommending substantial issue, unless three or more commissioners wish to take testimony and vote, the item will be deemed to raise a substantial issue. If three or more commissioners do wish to hear more testimony, I can give a more detailed presentation. Thank you.
Are there any ex parte communications to declare? Are there three or more commissioners who wish to hear the question of substantial issue? Seeing none, the commission has found substantial issue and will open and continue the de novo hearing.
Okay, then that brings us to item 7A, which is a permit amendment request from the city of Arcata to modify a permit granted in 2009 for a wetland restoration project involving reconfiguring a 1,600-foot-long channelized reach of Fickle Hill Creek, which is located in the Arcata Bottoms east of Highway 101 in the southeast part of the city. The amendment would reconfigure an additional 175-foot reach of the creek and involve installing additional large woody debris to improve channel complexity and involve certain restoration planting and installing seasonal fencing to keep cattle from affecting the channel in the winter months. The area was historically part of the extensive tidal marshes of Humboldt Bay, which were diked off for agricultural purposes. The channel over time had been dredged, straightened, bermed, and significantly modified and reduced in habitat value over time. The original project involved reestablishing that meandering course as well as improving habitat with planting and keeping the cattle out of the creek. And this amendment would simply extend that. There had been, when the original project was approved, the plans had inadvertently left off a 175-foot-long reach of the creek. And this would include that, which also has the benefit of connecting it to another restored area that had been restored under a separate permit in 2008. The primary issue is with regard to agricultural conversion. There's a loss in the amendment of approximately half acre of ag land. The conversion of the ag land for habitat restoration doesn't meet the provisions of 30241 and 30242 of the Coastal Act. So staff believes the project's inconsistent with the ag policies. However, similar to the commission's approval of the original project, staff believes that to not approve the development because of its inconsistency with the ag policies would be inconsistent as well with the habitat restoration policies of the Coastal Act, Section 30230 and 30231. And so thus, staff believes this is a situation where it's appropriate for the commission to invoke the conflict resolution policies. We feel that since there is no alternative that would be consistent with both provisions and there's no feasible alternative to the project that's been identified, that it can be sustained. So we're recommending approval. We're recommending that the original 11 special conditions of the original permit be reimposed with condition number 11 slightly modified to pick up the additional area covered by this amendment. And then we're asking for two additional conditions 12 and 13, which would require the submittal of a supplemental monitoring report to evaluate the success of this particular portion of the amendment to make sure that, in fact, the desired habitat restoration goals are achieved, and also to add erosion runoff control provisions for the amendment. And so with these conditions, we believe that the project, that it is appropriate to use the conflict resolution portion of the Coastal Act, and we believe that as conditioned, the development is consistent with the Coastal Act, and recommend approval of the staff recommendation. That concludes my remarks, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any ex parte communications? Seeing none, I will open the public hearing. We have no speaker slips, so I will close the public hearing and return to staff if you have any additional comments.
No, Madam Chair.
Yes, Commissioner Allgood.
Yeah, I move that the commission approve the proposed amendment.
So hard.
I move the commission approve the proposed amendment to Coastal Development Permit Number 1-09-020 pursuant to the staff recommendation.
And recommend a?
Yes, vote.
Do I have a second? Moved by Commissioner Allgood and seconded by Commissioner Mitchell. Any discussion? Any objection to a unanimous roll call?
Abstain.
Okay. Passage, excuse me? Commissioner Burke abstained. Motion passes. Passage of this motion results in the approval of the permit amendment as conditioned.
And that actually brings us, Madam Chair, to the end of North Coast, as James Joseph's eye was approved on consent and item 8A was postponed. So with that, I'll turn the microphone over to Charles Lester to present the North Central portion of the agenda.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. For the North Central Coast District today, in your North Central Coast District Director's Report, there are no minor items to report. However, there is quite a bit of correspondence related to the following items, as well as a couple addendums. You should also have a separately passed out addendum from yesterday for one of the items. So that would bring us to item number 11, and there is a PowerPoint for this. 11A. So this is a new appeal in the County of Marin, and this is an appeal brought on an action by the Marin County Board of Supervisors approving a coastal development permit for a 740 square foot detached one bedroom second unit, as well as an attached 424 square foot one car garage and some other accessory development. It also includes retiring or integrating an existing attached second unit into the existing single family home as part of that existing home. Next slide, please. The project location is near Bolinas, outside of Bolinas, and just orienting you here roughly in that yellow circle. San Francisco Bay is down off screen to the south. That's Stinson Beach there in the right lower portion sticking out, Bolinas Lagoon. And so the parcel sits above Bolinas Lagoon. Next slide. This is zeroing in on the site of the appeal, and the parcel lines are approximately shown here. It's about a 5-acre parcel, roughly, and you can see the existing home in the center of the site and the driveway up to that site. The white oval indicates the approximate location of the proposed detached second unit. And the other thing to note in this slide at this point is about half the parcel, the upper portion, is oak woodland, so that's the nature of the ground cover there. Next slide. These are shots taken on the site by staff of the proposed project. This is a site looking back towards where the second unit would be located. You can see the story poles in the center there. That existing shed would be removed from that location. The detached unit would be a maximum of 15 feet high in this location, and about 1,200 total square feet with the garage. Next slide. This is the view looking back towards the existing residence. Next slide. This is a view of the beginning of portion of the oak woodland to the back of the lot. Next slide. And this is a view looking to the east. The second unit would be located over to the far right in this picture, but giving you a sense of some of the open area of the parcel currently. Next slide. And again, looking back the other direction towards another single-family residence in the background there. Next slide. And then this is looking from the location of the single-family unit roughly back towards the house and gives you a sense of the openness that's available currently between the home and the proposed site. Next slide. So going back to the appeal, the appellant has raised a number of issues, and I'll talk about most of those. One of them has been a concern that the site proposed is not meeting the clustering policies of the LCP. Second concern is with the protection of agriculture. The third concern, protection of visual resources, geological hazards, and natural resources, and then some miscellaneous concerns. We've looked at the administrative record of the county's action and currently are recommending no substantial issue based on an evaluation of those various factors in the LCP. With respect to the clustering policy, the LCP does require that development in this area be clustered or sited in an area that provides the optimum access and also is least visually intrusive and also protects or minimizes impacts to agricultural lands and is also the most geologically stable. With respect to those three main concerns, our sense of this site is that with respect to hazards first, all of the site is equally hazardous or not hazardous if you look at the seismic concerns here. And so we don't think there's a significant benefit to moving the proposed site around with respect to geological hazards. With respect to agriculture, similarly, you can see the open areas that would be potentially available for agriculture, and this would be small-scale agriculture. We're talking about roughly half of this, so two and a half acres potentially, not minus the existing developed area. So it would be small-scale agriculture, maybe grazing of animals, some small vegetable or shallow-rooted vegetable production or something. And in terms of the proposed site, it's, again, about as good as some of the other areas that might potentially be sited with this development, except for an assessment by one of the consultants that this has a shading issue, so it would be less valuable from an agricultural standpoint because of the sun exposure at this proposed location. So there we didn't think there was a compelling or substantial issue either with respect to this proposed site. On the visual issues, we focused on potential impacts to public vantage points. As you know, generally the Coastal Act doesn't provide for the protection of private views, and that is not an issue that we have focused on in this case. We have looked at the question of public views, and in our view, literally, it doesn't seem to be a substantial impact. If you could go to the next slides, please. These are views from the Highway 1 across Bolinas Lagoon towards the site, and the approximate location of the property is behind that existing development that you can see fairly well in this shot. Next slide, please. Here's another view. The story poles, if you zoomed in on that existing house that you see there, the story poles for the proposed second unit would probably appear just above that. So it's not going to be a perceptible impact, we don't think, from this vantage point. Next slide. Here's another view. Next slide. And again, a closer view. And so it would be basically behind and slightly above that existing development. Next slide. And again, another view across the lagoon. So looking at those three issues, we don't believe that there's a substantial issue raised by the siting policy of the LCP. Similarly, we believe that the habitat issues and potential habitat of the site have been looked at adequately and that there are no substantial issues raised by those concerns. So in your addendum for this matter, we did summarize the substantial issue conclusion looking at the five factors that sometimes guide this commission when considering substantial issue, including whether there was factual and legal support for the county's action, the scope of the project here at Small, the significance of the resources potentially impacted, again, not substantial in our view, and whether there would be an adverse precedent or a matter of regional or statewide importance. And again, we don't think that any of those are really rise to the level of substantial issues. So that concludes the staff presentation.
Thank you. Any ex parte communications? Commissioner Stone.
Thank you. I had a telephone conference with Bob Cart on the 10th of this month at about 10:45 in my office. He is the appellant, and he also sent me, following that conversation, an email covering essentially the same issues. He says that the Marin County Planning Commission agreed that this project is not consistent with the LCP. He feels it's a terrible project that would be easy to fix, just locating the development next to the primary residence, that no trees would need to be cut, and then the LCP would be met. He says the project serves only to relocate and decluster a currently attached second unit in an area that would forever remove potential agricultural use. He feels the site is on a ridgetop with a view of Highway 1 that has a specified sensitive wildlife habitat and is a quail refuge. He cites the CARP, the Coastal Agricultural Residential and Planned District zoning, which was just cited favoring clustering, and provided that information for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else to my right? Any other ex parte communications? With that, I'll open the public hearing. This is an appeal. I have one speaker slip from Amy Trainer. You didn't check who you represent, and I need to ask you, is Amy here? I need to ask you, were you present? I need to find out about your standing. Did you participate in the appeal process? That's fine. All right. If you would come forward, you will get to speak first. And how much time will you need for your presentation?
3 to 4 minutes.
All right. We'll give you 4 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Amy Trainer. I'm the Director of the Environmental Action Committee of West Marin. I want to start off by saying I'm not against this project. The Environmental Action Committee strongly supports affordable housing and second units. As someone who greatly depends on second units and affordable housing in West Marin, I do commend the property owner, Ms. Darr, for her foresight and very nice design. However, as the Planning Commission found when they did an actual site visit, there are at least 6, if not 8 or 9 other sites that better fit with the LCP codes, LCP provisions. So in my testimony and letter to the Board of Supervisors, my concerns were namely two. One is that the clustering requirement of the LCP be met. It seemed from the county's staff report for the appeal at the Board of Supervisors that they were kind of taking the proposed LCP update language, which goes from you shall cluster to you can have one or more clusters and there aren't any standards. And it seemed like this proposed new standard that has not been subject to the commission's review and approval was the standard on which they were basing their review. And I had some real trouble with that. This particular zoning is intended to protect potential agricultural land. And the Bolinas Community Plan from back in the 70s, it did call this area the breadbasket. So there is a strong potential for agricultural use. The siting that is proposed here would impact about 5,000 square feet. You sort of saw the open meadow. So there is the potential to have this removal of potential ag land. The second issue was that the day after the Planning Commission overturned the Deputy Zoning Administrator's approval, the applicant, now part of this permit, I have to say, was a fence because it's in the coastal zone. They included the fence as part of the permit approval. After the permit had been basically denied by the Planning Commission, the next day the property owner started erecting a fence. And this fence is a wall that completely shuts off the quail, the deer, that if the appellant were here, he has photos, and he submitted those photos to the county. And not only was the fence so then taken out by the property owner of the overall project, it was longer than was actually applied for, and the county, you know, sort of just approved. I'd asked them to please not acquiesce to this fence construction, because I think it sets a really bad precedent when we have property owners, particularly in the coastal zone where we know there's wildlife movement and wildlife habitat. So that was the second reason, was that what I considered to be illegal fence construction. So again, it isn't that EAC is against construction of the second unit or against the really nice design that the property owner has put together. It really is that there's a better site that better protects this potential ag land, and I hope that the construction of the fence without the proper approval is taken into consideration. Thank you.
Well, let's go to the applicant. The applicant has two speaker slips in, and I'll give you a total of 4 minutes between you. You can decide how you want to split that up. So if you come forward and state your name for the record.
My name is Joseph Lambert, and I am Ari Andar's architect. I have a slideshow. It's 11A Lambert.
Now, are you going to use the whole 4 minutes?
No, I'm not.
And do you want to tell me how much time you?
Probably about 2 minutes. There's a number of slides. There's a bigger presentation, so I'm going to have to get to those slides.
Okay,
we'll just kind of flip through them. If you can go to the third slide, please. Back one, please. Back one, yeah. This is the property, and what it does is it shows the location of the development, the two driveways, the utilities, and any setbacks or easements that are required from those existing utilities. Next slide, please. These are the 8 sites that initially we looked at as part of the overall site analysis. And in looking at the LCP and all of its requirements, the first 3 sites, 1, 2, and 3, we consider to be essentially dangerous. Number 1 and 2 are just on the edge of the property where the hill drops off, and its proximity to the fire fuels from the tree growth, as well as the soil. I mean, because the hill drops off, more extensive foundation work would have to be done to hold that back. Site 3, though it's back from the ridgeline a bit, it is dense. It is under the cover of those trees, and those trees would then have to be removed. Site 4 was an addition, a remodel of an existing location. That then, because of what it was remodeling, required an additional structure over located where Site 5 would be, which is the replacing of the garage. So we moved away from that. The potential ag uses then is that great middle area. And in looking at that, Site 8 kind of was the area that really minimized the impact. We have a range biologist come out and assess the land, and they determined that area of all the ag land was the least best. And so everything else was better. And so we did review all these sites and then focus on that one because of the assessments that we are getting. And that's all I have to say for now.
Okay. Todd Smith.
Good morning. My name is Todd Smith. I represent the applicant, Ari Andar. I just want to briefly respond to a few issues. First of all, the appellant mentioned the Planning Commission decision several times. It's the Board of Supervisors in Marin County, which is charged with interpreting the local coastal plan. And in finding that this project was consistent with the local coastal plan or program, they specifically concluded that the Planning Commission got it wrong, that they misinterpreted the so-called clustering requirement. It's in the record, and I think if you read through the record or just listen to your staff report, you know that this issue was thoroughly considered and adequately addressed.
I would just say on the clustering issue that the code does not say, as the appellant suggested, that you shall cluster. What the code says is that structures shall be clustered or sited. Again, this was talked about in the step by the staff and in the staff report. And then there's four factors that you must consider when clustering or siting: geological stability, accessibility, visual prominence, and existing or possible future agricultural uses. Again, the record clearly demonstrates that all of these factors were considered at length by the Board of Supervisors, and the evidence supports their decision. As for the ag issue and whether this location, the proposed location, is better than other locations for purposes of ag use, there's plenty of evidence in the record, including an independent report by Jeffrey Creek, as well as a report from the Bryn Agricultural Land Trust, saying that this site is a good site and that other sites would actually have the potential to interfere with agricultural use. That's substantial evidence compared to simply the unsubstantiated opinion of the neighbor who opposes this project. And finally, I'd just like to say that this fence issue that was raised is not before you on this appeal. That's a code enforcement issue for Marin County. It has nothing to do with this application and this appeal. And there you go. Thank you very
Perfect.
Much.
Okay. With that, I'll close the public hearing and return to staff.
I don't have anything further to add at this time.
Commissioners, comments, motions? Commissioner Brennan? Oh, I thought I saw your hand go up. Can I get a motion from someone?
Madam Chair, I move the commission determine and resolve the appeal number A2 March 11020 does not present a substantial issue with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed under Coastal Act Section 30603 regarding consistency with local certified local coastal program. And I'm recommending a yes vote.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Allgood, seconded by Commissioner Wickett. Oh, Commissioner Bloom, sorry. Would you like to speak to your motion?
No, I think the issues were covered, but I would like to ask of staff, is the fencing that's, I know, not considered here, is it subject to need for a coastal development permit?
There may be a local level requirement for that. I'm not certain. There also may be an exemption, but it is going through the local review process. It might be a design review.
Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Bloom, any other comments?
Well, in following up with Commissioner Allgood's question, how does a fence get built without a coastal permit?
In some cases, LCPs will provide for certain exemptions or waiver of low-level approvals, and so fences.
Does this one do that?
I'm not certain what the code provides on this particular fence, but it would have to do with the nature of the fence, the height of the fence, the location of the fence.
Mr. Douglas?
Well, if it's a violation of the LCP, then the enforcement responsibility at the first instance is with the county. And it's my understanding that they, I don't know for sure what the status of that is at the local level, but it's not our enforcement issue. We could contact them and just see, but they are the ones who need to enforce their code in the first instance. If it's significant enough and they blow it off or ignore it, then we might get involved. But we're not at that stage.
Just a comment on that. I don't know if the allegations are correct, but the allegations are that the fence, in fact, impedes wildlife movement. So it could be significant and would, since it's an enforcement issue, it clearly is not related to this particular appeal, but it is something that you probably should look into and see whether or not there is an issue here for the fence and talk to the county.
We'll call the county and follow up. My understanding is there is some space at the bottom of the fence, but I don't know about other wildlife barriers.
Thank you. Any objection to a unanimous roll call? Seeing none, the commission has found no substantial issue.
Madam Chair?
Yes?
I would like to object.
Excuse me?
Object to a unanimous.
Oh, I'm sorry. Call the roll.
Commissioner Allgood?
Yes.
Allgood, yes. Commissioner Wickett?
Yes.
Wickett, yes. Commissioner Bloom?
Yes.
Bloom, yes. Commissioner Brennan?
No.
Brennan, no. Commissioner Burke?
No.
Burke, no. Commissioner Mitchell?
Yes.
Mitchell, yes. Commissioner Sanchez?
Yes.
Sanchez, yes. Commissioner Schellenberger?
Yes.
Schellenberger, yes. Commissioner Stone?
Yes.
Stone, yes. Commissioner Wan?
Yes.
Wan, yes. The vote is 8-2.
So that would bring us to item 12.
We've called the vote, and the commission has found no substantial issue. I need to call that before we go on. Thank you.
Excuse me. Item 12A is the next item. There is a PowerPoint for this, and Nicholas Dreyer will be giving the presentation.
Good morning, Commissioners and Madam Chair. This is item 12A, the Tomales Farm and Dairy CDP application. First, I'd like to point you to an addendum to the staff report, which makes some changes to the condition language and findings in response to concerns raised by the applicant. I will explain these changes in more detail later. Also, I have a correction to make regarding a typo on page 5 of the addendum. Toward the bottom of page 5, the sentence should read, "Further, the commission recognizes that this lot currently straddles the urban-rural boundary and that a strict interpretation of the 302.50A average parcel size would not be necessary since the focus of the rural land division criteria is those lands located outside of existing developed areas. Additionally, I would like to add subsection D under part 1A2 to special condition 1 to read as follows. Construction and maintenance of fencing and water devices within areas described under subpart 2A and 2B of this section to limit the intrusion of grazing cattle into said areas. The proposed project involves land divisions on agricultural land in the urban-rural boundary in Tomales, Marin County. Slide. This shows the vicinity and the location of Tomales. Next slide, please. This is the Tomales community boundary, and if you'll click the next three times over, that shows the rough outline of the project and that it straddles the urban-rural boundary of Tomales. Land divisions on agricultural lands raise fundamental Coastal Act issues regarding protection of agricultural lands and concentration of development. This case is somewhat unusual in that it straddles the urban-rural boundary, that is, most of the land in question is outside the urban area, but some of it is inside. As I will discuss in more detail, although the project presents potential inconsistencies with the Coastal Act, given these particular circumstances, we are recommending that it can be approved as long as the proper assurances and conditions are in place to protect agricultural viability and to stabilize the urban-rural boundary. Thus, staff is recommending approval with conditions. Slide. This is a view within the community boundary looking toward the community, the downtown community of Tomales. Next slide. And this is that downtown center of Tomales on slide 5. Next slide. These are portions of the applicant's property. This is inside the community boundary looking out towards the agricultural lands. Next slide. Slide 7 also shows portions of the applicant's property, gives you a sense of the character of the agricultural land. And next slide. Slide 8 does the same. This is a portion of the applicant's property. If you look at the next slide, this is the portion of the west of State Route 1. Where four existing lots on the left will be merged. This is approximately 61 acres. They'll be merged and redivided into four differently configured lots, which you can see on the right. And
proposed West Lot 3, which is outlined in the bold green, and proposed West Lot 4 are the agricultural lots. Proposed West Lot 3 will straddle the urban-rural boundary, and the boundary goes right between proposed lots 1 and 2, if you can see those up there. Under this application, the Commission's review is confined to proposed West Lot 3 and West Lot 4 because proposed West Lots 1 and 2 would be entirely outside of the Commission's retained jurisdiction. Next slide. To the east of Highway 1, one approximately 39-acre lot is being divided into three separate lots. As you see on the right, the proposed Lot 1, Lot 2, and Lot 3. And proposed Lot 2 is bisected by the community boundary, which isn't identified there, but it's on a later slide. It cuts it. A third of proposed Lot 2 is within the boundary, and about two-thirds is outside. Under this application, the Commission's review is confined to proposed Central Lot 2 because proposed Central Lots 1 and 3 would be entirely outside of the Commission's retained jurisdiction. The main issue raised by the project is the protection of a stable urban-rural boundary and coastal agriculture. The project, as proposed, has the potential to convert viable agricultural land for future non-agricultural purposes and would result in the shrinking of existing rural and agriculturally productive land on the Tomales Community urban-rural boundary. Also, the proposed development is adjacent to important agricultural lands and has the potential to diminish the productivity of these lands. The Coastal Act provides for the maximum protection of rural agricultural lands, but it does allow for the potential conversion of agricultural land on the urban-rural boundary under certain circumstances. Such conversions must meet specific tests, such as the establishment of stable boundaries separating urban and rural areas, including, and where necessary, clearly defined buffer areas to minimize conflicts between agricultural and urban land uses. Next slide. This slide shows the relevant portion of Section 30250, and in accordance with the Rural Land Division criteria of this section, staff analyzed the proposed project site in relation to the size and character of surrounding parcels outside the community boundary. Next slide. These are the surrounding parcels outside of the community boundary that were used in the analysis. All proposed parcels are smaller than the average size of surrounding parcels outside the community boundary, and all parcels except for proposed West Lot 4 are smaller than the median size. However, staff recognizes that the land is situated within, just outside, or straddling the urban-rural boundary. Accordingly, we think it appropriate to recommend approval of these smaller parcels if there's a condition that compensates for the allowance of smaller parcel sizes and helps to assure that the smaller parcel sizes will not destabilize the urban-rural boundary or increase either the conversion or diminish viability of rural agricultural land. Coastal Act Section 30241 complements 30250 and requires the protection of agricultural lands on the urban-rural boundary and sets limits on the conversion of all agricultural lands to non-agricultural uses. The subject agricultural lands located on proposed West Lot 3, West Lot 4, and Central Lot 2 are subject to this policy. Next slide, please. So slide 13, we're looking at existing West Lot 3 in green to proposed West Lot 3, also in green on the right side. Next slide. And slide 14 shows the area covered within this lot. Proposed West Lot 3 straddles the Tomales community boundary, but is intended to remain in agricultural use and will acquire an existing single-family residence and two small sheds from existing West Lot 2. Following the other changes to the property configuration, existing Lot 3 will be reduced from 36.65 acres to 21.04 acres. The majority of this lot is located outside the community boundary and is locally zoned Coastal Agricultural Production Zone, and the purpose of this zone is to preserve lands within the zone for agricultural use. A portion of the proposed West Lot 3 is located within the community boundary and is locally zoned Coastal Agricultural Residential Plan 2. This zoning district promotes maximum amount of land available for agricultural use and to maintain the visual, natural resource, and wildlife habitat values of the property and surrounding areas. This land sits within the community boundary, and this lot could potentially result in a destabilized community boundary and impacts to agricultural viability. To ensure that proposed West Lot 3 remains in agricultural use, thereby maintaining the stable boundary separating the urban and rural area, and to avoid conflicts between agricultural and urban land uses, the staff recommends the applicant record a deed restriction that will limit uses on the land to agricultural uses consistent with the coastal agricultural production zone district. As clarified in the addendum, the restriction covers the coastal agricultural production zone and proposed West Lot 3 outside the community boundary, but would not cover portions of proposed West Lot 3 zoned coastal agricultural residential planned 2, which are within the community boundary. As conditioned, staff has determined this lot to be consistent with Section 30241 and 30250. Next slide, please. Moving to proposed West Lot 4, which is in the pink outline on the right. Slide 15 shows that proposed lot, and next slide. And slide 16, and then next slide. Slide 17 show the area incorporated in proposed West Lot 4. This lot is 36.35 acres, would be located outside of the community boundary and is zoned Coastal Agricultural Production Zone 60. The applicant intends to expand an existing Marin Agricultural Land Trust easement to include 17 acres being added to Lot 4 and intends to keep this lot in agricultural use. However, the resulting lot is comprised almost entirely of Keys Creek, riparian areas, and wetlands. To ensure that proposed West Lot 4 remains in agricultural use and avoids conflicts between agricultural and urban land uses, the staff recommends that the applicant record a deed restriction that will limit uses on the land to agricultural uses consistent with the coastal agricultural production zone. Accordingly, the agricultural restriction would cover all of proposed West Lot 4, which lies outside the community boundary. As conditioned, staff has determined this lot to be consistent with Section 30241 and 30250. Next slide, please. This shows proposed Central Lot 2 on the right side in pink. And next slide. Slide 19 and then the next slide. Slide 20 show the area incorporated in this lot. Once a portion of approximately 39-acre existing Central Lot 3, this lot, proposed West Lot 2, is being reduced to 22.96 acres as a result of this land division. Proposed Central Lot 2 would straddle the Tamales community boundary. The majority of this lot is currently used for cattle grazing. It is intended to remain primarily as open space for grazing, with the southeast corner used as the future site of a creamery facility. However, proposed Central Lot 2 is split zoned, with roughly one-third of the property is zoned coastal village commercial residential B4 and is located within the community boundary. The remaining two-thirds are zoned coastal agricultural residential planned 20, located outside of the community boundary. While not currently proposed, the applicants have stated their desire to locate a creamery in the coastal agricultural residential plan zone, which would be allowable in this zone, and the applicant intends to allow tastings and other visitor serving uses at the site once the creamery is in operation. Although the site straddles the urban-rural boundary and does allow for commercial uses, this lot could potentially result in a destabilized community boundary and impacts to agricultural viability. 30241A requires that stable urban-rural boundaries be maintained and conflicts between agricultural and urban uses be minimized. To ensure this, staff recommends that the applicant record the deed restriction that will limit uses on the land to agricultural uses consistent within the coastal agricultural residential plan zone. As amended in the addendum, the restriction covers this coastal agricultural residential planned 2 zone in proposed Central Lot 2, or 20, sorry, coastal agricultural residential planned 20 zone in proposed Central Lot 2, which lies outside the community boundary, but would not cover portions of proposed Central Lot 2 zoned coastal village commercial residential B4, which are within the community boundary. As conditioned, staff has determined this lot to be consistent with Section 30241 and 30250. Next slide, please. So slides 21 and 22 illustrate the portions of applicant's existing property that will be affected by the agricultural deed restriction. You can see that the restrictions cover only the portions of the lots outside the Tomales community boundary, thereby allowing future build-out and infill to stabilize the urban-rural boundary. Other recommended special conditions include a generic deed restriction and a future development restriction requiring a coastal development permit for any future development. Staff only recommends approval of this project with the incorporated special conditions, which will compensate for the smaller parcel sizes and the potential impacts to agricultural land through an agricultural deed restriction, limiting future development to agricultural and ancillary uses. And that concludes my presentation.
Madam Chair, I have a slight change or adjustment to make at this time based on the conversations we've been having up to the last minute, and I didn't have a chance to let even Nick know. The applicant, as you'll probably hear, has been working on a master plan for a lot of different changes in the area, including some of the things in front of you today. And they've expressed a concern about being locked in a particular configuration with respect to what they're trying to do into the future by the deed restriction. They are amenable to the restrictions that we're proposing if it's not put into the deed restriction at this time. And we think that in this circumstance, that would be acceptable. It would have to come back to this commission for a permit amendment to change those restrictions, but basically you would be not putting it into the deed at this time and allowing them to potentially reconfigure, for example, on the west side, the potential for a bed and breakfast currently would be allowed potentially in the area not restricted by our condition. They would like to consider moving it to a further portion up to the north, which may be more optimum for the both the B&B proposed and also agricultural and visual issues, but we haven't evaluated that and it hasn't been in front of us. This would simply allow that to be considered in the future through a permit amendment to the commission. So we would be recommending that condition 2, which is the generic deed restriction, be eliminated, but nothing else changed. That would be the main change.
I think I certainly need to understand how this works, okay? And I see other commissioners. If you're not changing what you want to have happen, but you don't put a deed restriction on it, I don't understand how you accomplish any kind of condition.
The main difference is the process required to go through to put that restriction in place, and then there is a weakening of the assurance that you have that this restriction would be maintained over time. It would be subject to a future permit amendment as opposed to the restriction locking it down.
I think we're going to have a discussion about this during after the public comment, because commissioners are going to need to understand what this means and how it could be applied or not applied.
It is different from our normal practice, and it deserves a conversation.
And I just want to add that one concern that that we've had is the length of time it takes to process anything that requires recordation. As you know, this commission has, over the years, required a number of conditions to be recorded, but because of the staffing reductions that we've sustained, we just do not have the staff to process these in a timely manner, and so the delay is often a year or 2 years to get something recorded. So I've suggested to Charles that if we can find a functional equivalent way of getting us the level of assurance that this is not going to be converted to a non-agricultural use through either another deed, another restriction that they would enter into with MALT or a future permit amendment, that we ought to try that. But that's what ought to be part of the discussion as we go on.
And I don't want to go into a full discussion. Commissioner Sanchez says she has a very short question, but I would like, this is something I think that needs to be further discussed once we've listened to public comment.
Yeah, a quick question, and that has to do with your comment regarding a bed and breakfast. So are you suggesting that that is something that staff is looking to say would be consistent And that is the development that you, that is of concern here?
We don't have an opinion on that right now. Okay. That would be subject to future evaluation under a coastal development permit.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Any ex parte communications? Seeing none, I'll open the public hearing and call Ted Hall. You come forward, state your name for the record, and tell me how long you'll need for your presentation.
Good morning, Madam Chairman and Commissioners. My name's Ted Hall. I'm a organic multi-crop grower and cattle rancher. 15 minutes, including questions and answers. I have a presentation. First of all, I'd like to thank the work by the staff. We're actually all fundamentally aligned with this project. They are recommending approval of the lot line adjustments, but I think it's important that you all have the context of the broader project that we have undertaken. So next slide, please. We acquired 505 acres approximately 5 years ago from the historic Serini Ranch in Tomales. It straddles the town of Tomales. It is a very central part of the of that community. Our vision was to create a viable grass-based dairy and creamery and one or more specialty crop farms integrated as a hub that would, in the end, revitalize agriculture and serve the residents and visitors. The Serini Dairy itself had gone out of business in 1960, and the town of Tomales has really struggled along with the local farming community to develop a fresh and fundamental platform for pursuing agriculture. We've worked very hard with to develop a view of how to make an economic proposition work on this large piece of property. We partnered with MALT and the Coastal Commission, who've invested over $2 million in easements to help us with acquiring this property. And then in addition, we as proprietors have donated more than $3 million of development rights to secure this property. This has resulted in the reduction to date of more than of 28 lots to 16. Of those 16, three are encumbered with permanent MALT easements. And we created a plan that has been very broadly syndicated in the community. We enjoy a great deal of public support, and to our knowledge, face no opposition to this project. Next slide, please. So the important thing to for all everybody to understand is that there are really two large parcels that are the grass-based component of this plan that are already covered by the MALT easements. And the two core parcels that we're talking about today, Central Lot 2 and Central Lot 3, in effect are the components of the overall project that allow it to be economically viable. In the case of the creamery, it's the mechanism by which that grass gets converted to milk and ultimately to a viable product, creates a visitor destination in the town of Tomales, which is attractive to that community. And similarly, on the west side, the 21-acre specialty crop farm enables us to grow a range of crops beyond the current grasslands to serve roadside stand, potential B&B, and other attractive community serving uses. So next slide, please. The big picture is that there's two large farms who are made economically viable by the existence of the creamery and this special farm. So the context here is that we're enabling agriculture to be extended on a much larger area than just the two relatively small lots of 20 acres each. So these 40 acres taken together are enabling the productive deployment of more than 400 acres of property that are under MALT easement and which frankly are not economically viable without this kind of outlet. These lands will not return to agriculture and be remaining perpetually in grasslands unless this kind of project can be brought to fruition. Next slide, please. So the proposal in front of the commission today, beyond the two large farms, basically allows us to create a viable structure in the form of the creamery parcel and the specialty farm. In addition, it creates a lot which we envision as a live-work location for ranch management. We are donating a two-acre lot to the local Catholic Church, which resolves an awkward boundary within town and a historic artifact of the church really being located on our ranch. And as discussed by staff, it does result in the appropriate configuration of two single-family residential lots within the urban boundary. A very important point is that the west lot 4, which is approximately 17 acres, is will by irrevocable agreement become part of MALT. So next slide, please. Our basic issue to discuss this morning is simply not the substance of our expectation with regard to agricultural use, but in fact the specific form of implementation in the form of the deed restrictions. We are agreeing that agricultural use on these properties is appropriate. Moving to next slide. On Central Lot 2, we feel that the existing Marin County zoning, the fact that the commission retains complete jurisdiction over this project going forward, provides more than ample protection for the appropriate use of this property. And we're very concerned that several years of additional delay to this project will defer the economic development in the community and also put at risk our ability to in fact make this project viable. In the west, staff is proposing that we restrict the potential development to an area that is defined here on, next slide please, sorry, so-called Lot 2. That is really an artifact of, frankly, a gerrymandered urban boundary to incorporate this existing residence in the first place. There's really been no evaluation either by staff or by ourselves as whether or not this is the optimal location for this kind of activity going forward. Our concern isn't that we take this property out of appropriate use. It's the fact that we would be constrained by a very burdensome deed restriction process to a specific site when there may be virtually very attractive other sites in this location. Next slide, please. So, for example, as staff mentioned in the addendum to the report, there is this alternative location, for example, which is closer to the urban limit line and may very well be attractive. So, next slide. Our request to the commission is that you accept the staff's recommendation and approve our application, but doing so without the deed restrictions. Our concern is that these deed restrictions really provide no incremental protection and no apparent public benefit, and significantly run the risk of imposing economic limitations on our project. I do think we may have resolved the next slide. The last point is that on Lot 4, we do want to be clear that any restrictions imposed by this application do permit appropriate fencing and watering systems to maintain seasonal grazing, which is approved and, in fact, anticipated in our management plan with MALT. That is actually a series of practices that will allow us to maintain appropriate water quality. So we ask that there not be restrictions there. My final point is to point out that in the amended document under amend special conditions number 1, it's the second page. Don't believe there's a page number. It's under item 3 where it says repair or maintenance of the following: A, underground utilities; B, repair and maintenance of the following existing development. And there's little I, and then there's two little I's. This two little I's omits the fact that there's an existing single-family residence on this property. It's currently unoccupied, correction needs to be made to this this report. I'd like to reserve my additional time, Madam Chairman. Thank you. Okay.
Okay, thank you. Jeff Stump, you'll have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. My name is Jeff Stump. I'm the Easement Program Director for the Marin Agricultural Land Trust. We've been working with Tomas Farm and Dairy for over 5 years, of course, acquiring two separate agricultural conservation easements on the property at a heavily discounted price. We've made this investment because we believe in that this project will enhance the ultimate long-term viability of agriculture in Tomas. I think you saw my letter. I'm not going to regurgitate everything there. There's a map behind that shows the protected lands. We almost surround Tomales. Our goal is to protect agricultural use. And, you know, simply what we'd like to accomplish today is to not have these deed restrictions in advance of a more detailed planning process. This project is part of a master plan and that would go in front of Marin County. It's also in the original permit jurisdiction of the commission, so any change, any permit would come back to this commission. And to maintain the flexibility and the viability that is really so important, we don't want to restrict the project today. Basically, what you would be doing is restricting through a permanent deed restriction current the zoning in advance of even a local coastal program update, which is in process right now. Planning should be an iterative process. We're a partnership between conservationists and agriculturalists. We have been very successful because Marin County has very strong zoning policies. It's really a partnership, local, private partnership that we think makes sense. On the ground, this lot line adjustment would improve our existing agricultural conservation easement. Lot 4, which is created, is included in the existing multi-easement by an irrevocable option agreement that we have that we acquired at the time of acquiring the West easement that makes our monitoring of that easement and enforcement easier. You probably saw earlier the existing lot is a peninsula, which is just a wetland, and this would protect the balance of that property. And again, what MALT is doing is making investments with agricultural operators seeking to improve the viability of agriculture in the community. We understand and support the zoning. The zoning is there because it creates that balance and to protect the local community character while protecting agricultural use. And the sad fact in Marin is that we're losing dairies almost weekly now. We're down to under 30 dairies from probably 300. Local dairies provide local healthy food that does not have to be transported from the Midwest. This is an opportunity to provide a new organic local dairy with new local healthy food that's not, again, transportation is one of the, food is one of the biggest impacts to climate change that we have with emissions. So MALT has been very focused on supporting this type of agricultural operation, and I think, again, we'd ask you to go ahead and approve this per staff with the exception of removing the permanent deed restriction in advance of the planning process. So thank you very much, and I'd be happy to answer questions if you have any.
Thank you. With that, I'll close the public hearing and return to staff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple points. One, on the substance of the issue, I don't think there's any question that this is a fundamental Coastal Act issue, urban-rural boundaries, stable urban-rural boundaries, and protection of ag lands. And so we believe that the content of our recommendation and the restrictions proposed ought to remain in place. Second, on the question of the deed restriction, and I apologize for this moving target, but the condition number two that is proposed in the recommendation currently for the restriction is what's known as a generic deed restriction. So with respect to the processes that Mr. Douglas mentioned about the length of time it might take to process, that's not typically a lengthy process. That's a much more streamlined staff-level process. It doesn't go through our normal long review. So that's something I think you ought to consider. And so it's possible that you could maintain that generic deed restriction at this time, but you may want to understand and make clear that in the future, should this master plan result in a proposed amendment that would be functionally equivalent or better than what you're doing today, that you would consider an amendment that then could also result in an amendment to that deed restriction. So there are different ways to think about that, and that would enable you to keep the deed restriction in place, but also make clear that you're open to equal or better changes in the future that protect ag lands and maintain the urban-rural boundary. So those are the two things I wanted to mention at this time.
Commissioners? Commissioner Schallenberger?
Yeah, I, for one, much prefer this latest staff recommendation of leaving in place special condition number two, with an understanding that it will, if it comes back to us in a way that makes sense for us to amend it, we can do it at the time. But I would much prefer that we go the more conservative route of ag land protection now, so that our intention is very clear that that's what we intend to do. And if somebody, they come back with a permit amendment that makes sense to us and does not jeopardize the agricultural viability, I'm sure this commission will be more than happy to consider that.
I move that the commission approve coastal development permit number 2-09-013 pursuant to staff recommendation. Recommend a yes vote.
Second. Moved by Commissioner Sanchez, seconded by Commissioner Schallenberger. You want to talk to your motion?
Yes. I want to say that I'm very excited about the plan and the comments and that and the work that is being done together with MALT. I hope that you don't take this as anything negative, because I do hope that you come back with your master plan and that we are able to work this out. So I think what I'm hearing is more of a cautionary, but that very welcome, very much wanting to have you back and work with you on your master plan. But I think that staff has worked very closely and done a lot of work on this, and I looks like you will continue to be having that good relationship. Thank you.
Commissioner Schallenberg, you have anything additional?
Only to say that I think the staff has done an excellent job working this out, and the staff report pretty much covers it all, with the addition, I'd like to reiterate what Commissioner Sanchez said.
Commissioner Bloom?
Thank you. The applicant didn't really have a chance to respond to staff's latest iteration of the deed restriction, so I wonder if through the chair we could hear from the applicant.
Absolutely.
And see how the applicant feels about it, and perhaps the gentleman from MALT also.
While the applicant is coming up, let me just make clear, when we talked outside, I was under the impression that it was a deed restriction that required going through our process, which I said was quite lengthy, but understanding it's a generic deed restriction, which basically they do, and they just show us that they've done it, and with the understanding that if they in the future want to come back with an amendment to that deed restriction consistent with Coastal Act and the plan that they come up with, that they can do that. So that's the context in which I think you need to respond to the question.
Thank you, Commissioner.
State your name again, please.
Ted Hall, Tamales Farm and Dairy. The honest answer is I'm not sure I totally understand what the generic deed restriction means. The The issue for us is that the length of time to...
Take your time, because I...
What they're asking is if we could trail this and maybe discuss it.
I was going to suggest that we do that, in fact.
That'd be great.
Or we can take a break.
Let's take a break.
Let's take a 10-minute break, give you a chance to talk. Let me say
that... That works for everybody.
Right.
Let me add in for your discussions, okay, that what I hear is the concern about tying your hands in this planning process. If the commission, I think what staff has recommended is it would give the commission some assurances about what would happen if that planning process doesn't do what you purport it's going to do. But we should be giving you some assurances that if that planning process does, you will be able to accomplish it. And I think that would just simply require that if we allow this as a generic deed restriction, that it be very clear that the commission agrees to that second part, which to give you those insurances. So hopefully that will be part of your discussion.
Thank you.
Let's open the public. We have 2, 4, 6, 7. 8, 9. They're coming in. Okay. So let's open the public hearing again. And staff?
I think you are.
Okay. If you.
Madam Chairman, it's
state
Ted,
your, yes, state
Ted
your name.
Hall, Tamales Farm and Dairy, Tamales, California. To answer the question of the commissioner, my understanding is that what the staff is proposing is a generic deed restriction, which will move through a process that is without a long queue, be assigned to the staff member who's currently reviewing our project, which shortens the potential delay, and with the understanding from the commission that the purpose of this deed restriction is to provide a framework for us planning for our project going forward, and that if the integrated agricultural use of our project resulted in the need to make an amendment to the deed restrictions, the commission is willing to consider that and states that at the outset. So we aren't dealing with an ironclad structure. We're comfortable with this and would appreciate the commission's approval of the lot line adjustment and hope we can move forward and deliver milk and tamales.
Thank you.
And I believe I still have the floor, so let me ask the maker of the motion and the seconder if it is their understanding that their motion includes that understanding that was just referred to by the applicant.
In my comments, absolutely. I did express my excitement about having additional reviews of the master plan and how staff has been working very well with the applicant as well as MALT, and that, you know, anxious to have you come back.
Thank you. And Commissioner Brennan?
Thank you. And just quickly, first of all, I think the general feeling up here is what you've presented is just an incredible opportunity for a lot of us to use models in some of our communities to deal with some of the issues you're talking about. I just wanted to say that I don't want to throw any wet blanket on any way, shape, or form. What I've seen here today is just incredible, and I think the partnership you have is amazing. I just don't want to give any guarantees that you can come back with just about anything that's out. And I understand that wouldn't happen, but just the feeling is I think in my mind, there's enough of a partnership here to go forward and then to make sure that it stays within the framework of what we're all talking about.
I'm fundamentally a farmer, so.
Yeah, no, I think just if I might, the idea of the hospitality piece of it, the bed and breakfast, the local farm, I mean, we all get it and realize sometimes that it's taking more than just strictly farming to make the whole net work. So doing that within the constraints of where you're at and the constraints of the Coastal Act, I think certainly we all up here would certainly look forward to working with you in the future.
Commissioner Schallenberger, you were the seconder of the motion. Do you have any additional comments?
I was prepared to respond to Commissioner Bloom only to say that I, in my second comments, did say that I agreed with what Commissioner Sanchez had said.
Yes, I just, if I might take the floor back since I wasn't quite finished. Thank you, Madam Chair. I simply wanted to clarify that subsequent to our break and what we've heard from the applicant, that was the understanding of the maker and the seconder, and with that understanding, that gains my support for the motion, and I too agree that this is just a fabulous effort that's a collaborative effort happening at this very beautiful site, and looking at those photographs just makes me realize what a city slicker I am. but love to come up and visit when this project is complete.
Stay
or before, for that
stay
matter.
Stay at the Dude Ranch.
Yeah. Commissioner Allgood?
Yes, I want to compliment the applicant and staff for the work they've done here. Some concerns. I would like the record to reflect our concerns that what comes back be consistent with the Coastal Act and Coastal Act policies, and that we have as complete a record as possible if folks do come back stating limitations and concerns and expectations. In going with the generic deed restriction, and I'm going to support this despite my lactose intolerance. So. Oh, actually, I've learned that I'm not lactose intolerant.
You're just intolerant. Any other comments?
Madam Chair, just from staff's perspective, we have the same understanding, but in terms of the regulation, our understanding is that not only would this come back in meeting the Coastal Act and our policies, but also the it would not weaken or lessen the intended effect of what you're doing today, so it would be equal to or better than what we have in front of us.
Yeah. And we'll change the staff report to reflect that.
And for the record, the applicant is nodding as we're saying this. Is that correct? Yes.
All right. So we're all in agreement at this point, it looks like. Is there any objection to a unanimous roll call? Seeing none, the permit is approved as modified and with the conditions and adoption of the findings in the staff report. Okay.
Thank you. That brings us to item 12B, which is a permit in San Mateo County, and there's a PowerPoint presentation for this item as well. This is the de novo hearing of an appeal that you heard, I believe, in March and found substantial issue on. It's a trail project at the Fitzgerald Marine Reserve in Moss Beach in San Mateo County. Next slide, please. The county is proposing to improve an existing trail at Fitzgerald Marine Reserve, and that's the project location in Monterra, south of San Francisco. Next slide. This is an overview of the trail location. You can see it, I think, in red there. Basically, there's an existing trail now within the reserve, unimproved, that goes from Cypress Avenue on the right northward to the visitor center location in the park up to the upper left. The trail would provide a improved through connection between those two points, as well as a bridge to complete that connection. It's a popular trail currently in the reserve and used for school groups and nature study and that sort of thing. It would also be a link in the California Coastal Trail, as imagined by the county, and some of that surrounding planning is ongoing in terms of what other links would be made to the north and south. Next slide. So the project description includes a replacement of a bridge across San Vicente Creek, widening and improving the existing trail for ADA compliance and accessibility, and a connection with the California Coastal Trail. Next slide. The issues that we looked at included public access, sensitive habitats, including wetlands and native strawberry, riparian areas, and cultural resources. Next slide. In terms of public access, this is a photo of the existing trail. It's a pretty typical segment of the existing trail. This would redevelop and improve it. It would make a connection with the CCT, as I mentioned, provide ADA access, and be a uniform 8-foot width with no improved shoulders. And that inset there is the proposed gravel pave technology that they would use to make it not pavement per se, but a hardscape that's suitable for ADA access. Next slide. In terms of wetlands, you may recall that was one of the issues brought up in the substantial issue hearing. We did go visit the site subsequent to that hearing, including with Dr. Dixon, who himself did some digging around and has concluded, and there's the attachment in the staff recommendation that there are no wetlands present along the trail. In addition, native strawberry in the area will be replanted at a 1-to-1 ratio, which is the requirement of the LUP in this case. Next slide. This is a shot of an existing bridge in the location where a new bridge would be placed. This is a temporary bridge. This bridge needs to be replaced because it's the only means of connecting the trail to the northern end of the reserve and to the parking lot. And it will be a size eight feet also necessary to ensure that it lasts as the creek ebbs and flows here, and a length in order to allow that creek to take its natural course over time and also provide safe crossing. Next slide. In terms of cultural resources, there would be some potential impact at the location of the bridge, but the county has designed the project with mitigation measures, including capping the resources and monitoring in order to meet the requirements of the LUP, and we believe that those issues are adequately addressed. Next slide. So the project includes special conditions for final project plans to include a maximum 8 feet, no shoulders, public access signs and materials to be submitted for the commission's review, and best management practices for construction, as well as all of the conditions that the county had imposed in order to assure protection of resources as the trail is redeveloped. And that concludes the staff presentation.
Is that complete? Staff report. Any ex parte communications? Seeing none, I'll open the public hearing and call Ben McMullen. You'll have 3 minutes.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Apparently, the applicant has not submitted a speaker slip, and I think he wants to speak.
Okay. Well, I had no speaker slip,
yeah,
which is why I didn't call him. So
he could fill that out at the after.
Mr. McMullen, if you could take your seat, and we'll have the applicant speak first,
sure.
And then just sit right here.
Absolutely.
Okay. And if the applicant will come up and state your name for the record, and then you'll need to fill out a speaker slip. And
will
give it
do.
To our staff.
Okay. Being the applicant on the project, just wasn't aware of that. Wanted to give you a copy of a letter.
You need to state your name for the record.
My name is Sam Herzberg. I'm the senior planner with San Mateo County Parks Department.
And how much time will you need for your
About 8 minutes.
Okay, fine.
I'd like to pass out a letter from our president of our county board of supervisors. The letter came in late, and I was advised to hand deliver it. I have a PowerPoint presentation just to give you a little background. This is the Fitzgerald Marine Reserve on the left-hand side. County Parks has been working closely with the Midcoast Park and Recreation Committee on identifying potential locations for the coastal trail from Half Moon Bay through Princeton. And now we're working on the second phase, which is from Princeton all the way north to Devil's Slide. And so this Fitzgerald Marine Reserve is right in the middle of that area. Our basic criteria for the development of the coastal trail was to meet the usage needs, the multi-use usage needs, be sustainable over the long term, be accessible, minimal impacts to natural historic resources, and meet county trail guidelines, which comply with county general plan policies. This is our piece of the California Coastal Trail. It's about 1,400 foot long. It's from North Lake Street to Cypress Street. The only other crossing from in between these two points is within the right-of-way of Highway 1, which is not improved. This trail would be multi-use and meet ADA requirements, and it would provide a permanent crossing for San Vicente Creek, which has been meandering quite a bit since it lost a culvert and chimney several years ago, and downstream, and the creek has been moving around, and the temporary bridge there is meant as a temporary solution. We're proposing a 60-foot fiberglass bridge. One of the questions that came up at your last hearing was about alternatives. 1997, we began a master plan process for Fitzgerald Marine Reserve. This is the first master plan for Fitzgerald. We had 13 public meetings. We subsequently had four more public meetings over a two-year period when preparing the program EIR, which was eventually adopted by our Board of Supervisors in 2005. And the recommendation at that time was that the coastal trail should be multi-use and located on the eastern perimeter of the Marine Reserve following existing trail alignment. And that's where it's proposed. In terms of the actual design of this project, we had eight public meetings, including with our Midcoast Park and Rec Committee, multiple times, our Park and Rec Commission. It was approved by the Planning Commission. So we had extensive public input into our design. In terms of alternatives analysis, the only alternatives were, should we make the trail ADA accessible or not? And we decided it should be both multi-use and ADA accessible. We prepared a survey, a biological report, a hydrological report, engineer's report, and archaeological report, because we have an archaeological site on the south side of San Vicente Creek. We made some changes to the project. Originally, it was proposed a 12-foot wide bridge. We reduced that to 8 feet. The multi-use trail was originally going to be 10-foot paved with 2-foot graveled shoulders on either side. We reduced that to 8-foot multi-use with no improved shoulders. And we changed it from the surfacing from asphalt to this gravel paved material, which is kind of a plastic grid on rock, and it's packed down very tightly. It's been used in Napa. We haven't used it in San Mateo County. We're going to try and use it as an alternative surface. One of the things the public really asked us was to try a pervious material, and so that's what we're trying. And there were numerous, there are numerous mitigations for environmental protection that are part of the coastal development permit. There were 28 additional conditions added at the Planning Commission meeting. This is a copy of showing what the gravel paved grid looks like. This has been used at the Pentagon, at Arlington National Cemetery. It's used for equestrian use, and it's handicapped accessible. When you're doing an ADA trail, you need to have a specific slope requirement, about 5%. And as you can see just from this photo, we need to do some modifications to be able to achieve that grade. In fact, what we're doing is we're cutting the trail to the right uphill. And some of the concerns expressed have been about, you know, any wetland in the area being on the left-hand side. Our trail would be moved, if anything, further away from where it is currently to be able to meet the slope requirements. We recently, because of the creek's meandering, had to replace our previously existing 24-foot temporary bridge with a 36-foot temporary bridge. And this is where the footbridge is, just south of North Lake Street. The creek bank was failing, and we were really concerned about public safety, and it had to be done. We did an emergency permits with the agencies. We installed the bridge by crane, so there was no significant impact to the land. We winterized, put erosion control measures, and it's going to last as a temporary fix until we're able to install the permanent fix. Coastal Commission recently came out last 2 months to review the site to look for the presence of a wetland, which was a concern. And they determined there are no wetland habitats present directly adjacent to the trail or that would be otherwise directly impacted by the proposed development. There were recently, you have an addendum to your staff report, there were some concerns about other drainage concerns. Those are concerns about surface drainage And because gravel pave is a pervious material, we did not need to put a culvert like we had originally anticipated when we had proposed a paved trail. Just to show you where that is, that wooden post on the left-hand side there, the drainage of concern, that surface drainage of concern is just on the other side. And this area is where our archaeological site is. It's not a burial site. It's kitchen tools that were used when they used to gather shellfish, and they'd bring it up here and camp in the woods, and they would eat right by the creek here. But we're planning on, the trail will go on top of the archaeological site. The footings on the south side of the bridge have been designed to not be impactful of that site. In conclusion, I'd just like to state that we're designing this trail for all users in California for recreational use. And because grant funds are involved, we stand to lose up to $750,000 in grant funding if the project's not approved. Just want to be clear, we really want to make sure this trail can be used by everyone. Thank you. Be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. How much time left? 7 seconds. Okay, Ben McMullen. Center for Independent Living.
Yes, my name is Ben McMullen. I'm the Systems Change Coordinator at Center for Independence of People with Disabilities. I would like to thank the commission for hearing my public comment today. I'm in support of widening this trail to include people with disabilities who may utilize durable medical equipment to enjoy the outdoors. I think we can all appreciate enjoying our environment and what's around us and what's out there. And all we're asking for is equal access to this trail and this project, equally to others, Californians and Americans without disabilities. Widening the trail would increase the enjoyment of people that use durable medical equipment, such as wheelchairs, to enjoy it together, because we like to enjoy the environment with our friends. We often don't travel alone. So just to increase personal access, environmental access, and enjoyment for all, we would like to see this trail widened so it includes everybody in the project. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. McMullen. Well said. Susie Castoria. Commission on Disabilities.
Commission on Disabilities. Good morning. Thank you for seeing me. I'm Susie Castoria from the Commission on Disabilities of San Mateo County, and we strongly support an 8-foot trail. If you have two people in a wheelchair traveling together, it's 6 feet. People in wheelchairs tend to go slower than other people. So if you have 15 fourth graders from Fairlawn View coming down to see the seals, and they come up against two people in a wheelchair, they will run off the path and around the chairs and into sensitive environmental areas. They will trample anything that's in their way, but they will get around us. So an 8-foot trail will actually allow people with disabilities to travel and the general healthy public to get around us when they need to. For that, the Commission on Disabilities strongly supports the park's plan of an 8-foot trail. Thank you.
Thank you. Lucy Williams.
Good morning, Commissioners. We appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
Morning.
My name is Lucy Hupp-Williams. I've lived in the Bay Area since 1948, and specifically in San Mateo County since 1963. I've been disabled most of my life, but early on I was not so disabled and was able to ride my horse and hike any trails I wanted to, didn't matter how wide they were. As I've become more disabled, I've raised a disabled nephew. I have children that aren't disabled. I have friends and family that are disabled and aren't disabled. And we all try and go places together. And we find that 6-foot trails don't work for people who have to use modalities. When I walk on the trail, I take up about 4 feet because I don't want to get into the vegetation and trip. My nephew's wheelchair is huge. He's 6'2". He doesn't bend. He takes up a lot of space with his permobile, just for two examples. Children and adults, women, people with strollers, they push around us and they go into the vegetation. So we really do support a move to 8 feet for paths. It's better for the entire community, not just the people with disability. In 1990, ADA granted accessibility for all. And I have a little bit of trouble understanding why the concept of accessibility is so difficult when it enables everybody to enjoy a trail. I'd like to thank the Park Department for their decision to improve the trails to 8 feet or 12 feet or whatever they need to do for their own access. It keeps people from walking on the vegetation. I like to tide pool. I'm very careful where I put the ends of my crutches because people are concerned about tide pools. Well, my feet are a lot bigger than my crutches. So it's hard now to go tide pooling, but I still try and do it. And I'd like to continue to do it until I can't anymore. But I appreciate your hearing my comments.
Thank you very much, Ms. Williams. Sabrina Brennan.
Hi, my name is Sabrina Brennan, and I live in Moss Beach. I'm going to start by just responding to some of the comments that you already heard, and then I'm going to get into my slide presentation. So Sam mentioned that we have a committee called the Midcoast Parks and Recreation Committee, which deals with trail planning on the midcoast of San Mateo County. So that would be Miramar, El Granada, Princeton, Moss Beach, and Monterra. I'm a member of that committee. And in this particular location of the Fitzgerald Marine Reserve, we have more than one strand of the coastal trail. And I think that's something that's going to be coming up a lot in the future, especially with sea level rise. We're going to be looking at needing to have more than one strand of the coastal trail in various locations. This happens to be one of those locations. So on this particular strand, the Dardanelle Trail, we did have multiple public meetings, which the county hosted, and the community was extremely outspoken about their concerns about the county's plans for the trail. Originally, it started out as a much wider trail that was going to be asphalt, and the county was very resistant to change on that, but after many meetings and a lot of letters, eventually they did make the change to a different surface, which I really appreciate. So I think that's a big improvement, and I'm very pleased about that. As far as grant funding goes, I have spoken with the Coastal Conservancy, and they've told me and assured me that my appeal has not put at risk the grant funding for this project. And I just wanted to make that point of clarification because my goal with this appeal was never to cost the county to lose grant funding. And then as far as ADA requirements are concerned, I checked with state parks, and I also checked with the Department of Justice, and I checked with ADA on what those requirements are. What I've learned is that, and this is the case for state parks, trails are allowed to be a minimum of 3 to 4 feet wide and still meet ADA requirements. So I just wanted to make that point of clarification. I don't think that 3 to 4 feet wide is necessarily appropriate in every location. So I'll just say I think it depends on the type of location. This happens to be a marine reserve. This isn't a state beach. This isn't a state park. This is a reserve where we're protecting the area. It's part of the Fitzgerald Marine Reserve watershed. So it's a watershed area. So I'm going to start the presentation. Here we go. I'd like to thank the Coastal Commission staff for spending considerable time reviewing the concerns.
How much more time do you need? I'm sorry.
Oh, could I have the same amount that the county had?
So do you need 4 more minutes?
Yes, please.
4 more?
Yeah. Okay, thank you. So I'd like to start by thanking the Coastal Commission staff. I recognize that they've spent a lot of time reviewing this, and I appreciate that. Today, I'd just like to really address one issue, which is drainage. The project is within, like I said, the Fitzgerald Marine Reserve watershed. There's a lot of water flowing and sheeting across this land. The county currently plans to use filter cloth and gravel to mitigate drainage for the seasonal creek that flows across the trail west of San Vicente Creek. A substantial volume of water flows downhill from the spring-fed ponds across the proposed trail site and into San Vicente Creek during rainy months. In fact, it's so much water that in order to cross that seasonal creek, you either have to get a running start and take a big flying leap across, or what locals do is we put a log across and then we cross on the log. So that's kind of how we've been dealing with that particular issue. At this time, the county, sorry. Oh, wait a minute. Here we are, drainage. At this time, this is from the staff report addendum. The county plans to put it, to have a fabric filter and subsequent clean fill will allow drainage to flow properly through the trail at this location. To me, that seems a little vague. I think originally they'd planned on putting a culvert where the seasonal creek is, and if they put in a fabric and clean fill, I think that's just going to block the water and the water's going to pull up. I'm concerned about that because we've had other drainage problems at this particular park. The new Fitzgerald Marine Reserve staircase is currently being undermined by stormwater runoff from an open drain pipe located next to the foundation of the staircase. You can see that on the right. You can see where the erosion is happening. You can't quite see the pipe, but I'm going to show a picture of that. The staircase project was permitted by the Coastal Commission and completed 5 months ago. This is the pipe, and this is another picture, so you can see where the water is draining out. Now, when it's raining, there's a really substantial flow of water coming out of that pipe. The erosion problem has gotten progressively worse over the last few months, and as far as I know, the county doesn't have any current plans to deal with this problem. So now we're back to the current plan, which is for the Fitzgerald Marine Reserve Trail, and when I asked staff to show me where in the plan the county was dealing with the drainage for the seasonal creek, I was told to look at this particular page of the county plan, and in reading that, I don't see where drainage is discussed, and so I don't feel like the question has really been answered. So based on that, I'd like to ask the Coastal Commission to add a condition of approval that addresses drainage for the seasonal creek specifically. And this is not a great picture, but that shows you where the dip is. And this is not during the rain, so there isn't, you know, a lot of water there. And this is actually after the rainy months. But you can kind of get an idea where it dips down there, and there's a lot of water flowing across. And then the creek is off to the right side. I mean, San Vicente Creek is off to the right side. So this is a feeder seasonal creek that feeds into the larger creek, which is San Vicente. And that's it. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. That was the last of the speaker slips, and I believe, let's see. Is there need for rebuttal? No, right? It's only 7 seconds. Yes?
Yes, apparently.
Okay, Mr. Hertzberg, state your name again. And
just to clarify, Sam Hertzberg, senior planner, San Mateo County Parks. We did a hydrological study. We looked at all jurisdictional wetlands. San Vicente Creek is a jurisdictional creek. What's being called a seasonal creek by Mrs. Brennan is not a jurisdictional wetland. It is surface drainage off the ground when it rains. It is not a creek. It doesn't have the biology of a creek. It doesn't have a riparian channel. It's not even an intermittent creek of any kind. So I just want to clarify that, because although there's water and it may be moist there during the wettest time of the year, it does not make it a creek. The drainage is facilitated through the permeable materials that are proposed.
Thank you very much. I'll close the public comment portion of the public hearing and go back to staff.
Just a quick clarification that we would concur that that is a drainage, in our view, a seasonal drainage, not a creek or a riparian resource, and I'm available for questions.
Okay, thank you. So coming back to the commission, any comments by commissioners? Commissioner Stone?
Thank you. I move that the commission approve coastal development permit number A-2-SMC-11-010, subject to the conditions as stated, and I'm recommending or asking for a yes vote.
Seconds.
Second by Commissioner Allgood. Would you like to speak to your motion, Commissioner?
Just briefly, Stone? We saw this in the substantial issue hearing, and now we're seeing it here, and I think this project, I appreciate the work that staff has done and the County of San Mateo. I know that there are always issues we need to be very aware of when putting trails in, especially along riparian and sensitive areas. And I think they've done a good job. This project obviously will enhance access and is a important connector ultimately on the California Trail. So I think this is a good project, and I'm hoping we can support this here today. Thank you.
Thank you. And as to your second, Commissioner Allgood?
Well, I don't need to speak further to my second, but I did want to ask one question of staff. The staircase that was alluded to in the testimony of the appellant, that's not part of this project, is that correct? Okay. And that, you are, go ahead.
Sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
That's correct. It's not part of this project.
And are you monitoring the erosion there and seemed to be highlighted in the photograph?
I was not aware of that, but we can take a look at it next time we're out there.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Bloom?
Thank you. I want to commend staff for its work and also the county for taking on this project, which will enhance access for all, in the, not just in the County of San Mateo, but for anyone who comes to visit this beautiful area.
Any other comments? Any objection to unanimous yes vote? The mover and seconder recommending the yes vote. Seeing none, the commission hereby approves coastal development permit for the proposed development, adopts the findings set forth on the grounds of the development as conditioned, will be in conformity with the certified San Mateo County LCP and the public access policies of the Coastal Act. Thank you. Staff?
Madam Chair, I just wanted to mention and thank Roxana Farshi, who is the analyst on this project. You may remember seeing her in March. She was not able to travel today to this hearing, but I wanted to recognize her. She's been a very helpful intern that we were able to keep on to make things, keep them moving. But she's headed off to the Duke School of Environment in June, and so we're very happy about that, and we're hoping that she considers
Fantastic.
Coming back our way. So.
Yeah, letting people go.
Thank you.
Right. I think that completes the North Central agenda.
Now on to the South Coast District.
You're late, Ross.
Los Angeles County.
That guy really looks like Russ.
You can't let me just walk in.
I've been out there for a while.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry for the gymnastics here. Yeah, next item is item 13, and this is the Deputy Director's report for Los Angeles County portion of the South Coast District, and this is a listing of the waivers, immaterial amendments, and immaterial extensions for the district. I have one emergency permit to report on for emergency repairs to two piers on Catalina Island that were damaged by the March 11th tsunami. The repairs consist of the replacement of one pile at the Cat Point Pier and two piles at the Ballast Point Pier. And staff is not aware of any opposition to the district director's report and recommends the commission concur with the executive director's determination on these matters.
Thank you. Any ex parte reports, communications report? Seeing none, any objection to concurrence with the executive director's determination? Seeing no objections, the commission concurs with the executive director's determination.
That brings us to item 14, and these are the regular calendar permit items. Staff is recommending we move to consent calendar, and staff is recommending two items we move to consent calendar, and those are items 15A, the Cohen permit application, and item 16A, the Yu Sheng and Wu permit amendment. I would note that there is a staff report addendum for item 15A, the Cohen application, which is dock replacement project on Naples Island in Long Beach. The addendum includes some additions to the findings regarding the size and extent of the proposed dock. And the new dock is only 24 square feet larger than the existing dock. And the new replacement dock, in our view, will not have any significant adverse impacts on or individual or cumulative impacts on coastal resources. And staff is not aware of any opposition to the items on the consent calendar here and recommends the commission vote and approve these items.
Yes, and I have no speaker slips on any of these items. Any ex parte communications to report? Can I get a motion?
Move approval.
Moved by Commissioner
Second.
Sanchez, seconded by Commissioner Allgood. Any objection to unanimous approval? Seeing none, the commission has approved the consent calendar items.
Next item up is item 17A, and these are revised findings for Coastal Development Permit 5-10-015, and the applicant is Loins LLC. The permit application included the after-the-fact importation of 1,000 cubic yards of soil to cap an existing landfill and revegetate the disturbed areas on the site. And the site is a 9-acre site situated between Loins Drive and the north bank of Los Cerritos Channel in the city of Long Beach. The commission required the applicant to submit a revised revegetation and monitoring plan that recreated the site's pre-disturbance topography, including seasonal ponds and alkali meadows. The commission further required the applicant to construct an impermeable cap on the dump to prevent water from infiltrating into this landfill. And these requirements were outlined in Special Condition 3 of the permit. This item was postponed for the March hearing in order to address some omissions in the findings outlined by the applicant with regard to some references and citations to some studies that were submitted by the applicant. Staff believes the revised findings do reflect the commission's action here and recommends the commission adopt the findings, and only those commissioners on the prevailing side are eligible to vote on the revised findings, and those commissioners are Blank, Bloom, Mercurimi, Sanchez, Schallenberger, Stone, and Juan. And that concludes my presentation on this item.
Thank you. Any ex parte communications? Seeing none, I do have a speaker slip. Don Schmitz, come up, state your name for the record. And tell me how long you will need.
Madam Chair, Don Schmitz, on behalf of the applicant, with apologies to the commission, I'm going to need a full 30 seconds on this. I just want to thank your staff. They've now included all the documentation so that the findings are complete and reflective of the record. Also, take the opportunity, I was brought on board after the commission hearing to deal with the condition compliance. As you know, there's a real short time frame on this, and we've been working diligently on that with the Air Quality Management District and Regional Water Quality Control Board and the Health Department. So we hope to get this wrapped up to the commission's satisfaction shortly. So thank you.
Thank you. With that, do I have any discussion? A motion? Commissioner Schallenberger?
I move the commission adopt the revised findings proposed by staff in support of the commission's action on November 19th, 2010, approving with conditions coastal development permit application A5LOB10-015 and ask for a yes vote.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Schallenberger, second by Commissioner Bloom. By a show of hands, all those eligible to vote. It's unanimous. The revised findings are approved.
Thank you. That brings us to item 18A, and this is the Deputy Director's report for the South Central Coast District, which again is a listing of those waivers, immaterial amendments, immaterial extensions for the districts and emergency permits. I would like to highlight one immaterial amendment for Coastal Development Permit 4-07098 for the restoration of the Malibu Lagoon. The applicant is the California Department of Parks and Recreation. And as you remember, this project generated a lot of controversy in the local area. The amendment is to delete a proposed barrier wall from the project plans that was proposed between the Malibu Lagoon State Park and the residential properties on the colony. The amendment also includes a 3-foot maintenance corridor or pathway between the homeowner's property line and the drainage swale that's adjacent to the perimeter road surrounding this portion of the lagoon. The changes to the approved Malibu Lagoon restoration plan are the result of a settlement agreement that was reached between the applicant and the Malibu Colony property owners. This agreement requires the property owners to construct the barrier wall on their property, and which will include gates that will access this maintenance corridor. Because the wall is located on private property and outside the state park boundaries and outside the commission's permit jurisdiction, the city of Malibu will be responsible for processing the coastal development permit for this wall. The wall design and specifications are included in the settlement agreement, and the existing barrier fences will not be removed until the homeowners secure a permit and begin construction of this wall. To date, we have not received any objections to this immaterial amendment, and I would also have another note with regard to an emergency permit in the report that was issued to the California State Parks for some minor repairs to an existing rock revetment that protects the historic Adamson House and grounds at Malibu Lagoon State Park. The repairs consisted of removing the rock that has migrated from the revetment out onto the beach and restacking that rock on the revetment. It will be in the same footprint as the existing revetment. The emergency permit also authorized the one-time redirection of the mouth of Malibu Creek 100 feet north up coast, and the formation of this sand berm at the mouth of the lagoon forced the creek mouth in the direction of the Adamson House grounds and facility, which endangered the facility from erosion. Now, staff is not aware of any opposition to the district director's report, and again, we recommend your commission concur with the executive director's determination on these matters. And that concludes my comments on that.
Any objection to finding concurrence? Seeing none, commission concurs.
That moves us to item 19, and these are the regular calendar permit items. Staff is recommending you move to the consent calendar, and staff is recommending one item be moved to the consent calendar, and that is item 21C, the Tadros permit application. Now, staff did receive a letter late last night from a neighbor, Linda Cady, raising several concerns regarding this application. Now, the applicant here is proposing a two-story, 35-foot-high, 1,200-square-foot residence with a 1,258-square-foot garage on a small-lot subdivision parcel in the Santa Monica Mountains. The neighbor indicates that the large amounts of decks and balconies here could present a fire hazard in the area. There are two at-grade decks and some balconies on the residence that we do not believe are excessive in size or scale, and the balconies are not of the raised wood type that would be a fire hazard. These are integrated in the design of the residence or a plaster and stucco design, and so staff does not believe these decks or balconies represent a fire hazard. She also raises concern that the four-car garage is excessive in size for this 1,228-square-foot house, and this area could be converted into a rental unit. Now, the conversion of garage space into living area has been an issue in these small-lot subdivisions, given the size of the residences are limited by this by the gross structural area formula we use in that in these areas. In this case, the residence is limited to a maximum size of 1,270 square feet, and staff is recommending a permit condition to require any future improvements of the residence that would typically be exempt from permit requirements. These would require a permit amendment or a new permit. In addition, the permit has been conditioned to require the applicant to record the permit as a deed restriction on the property, so we have so future residences are on notice that there's a restriction here. She also raises concerns with regard to the proximity of the residence to her home. However, in these small urban scale lots, all of these residents are somewhat cheek to jowl. Finally, she states the proposed three-story home is not in character with the other homes in the area, and in staff's view, this residence is consistent with the size and scale of residents in the area. Therefore, we are recommending this just remain on the consent calendar, and we recommend the commission vote and approve the calendar. That concludes my presentation.
Any ex parte communications? Can I get a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Sanchez, seconded by Commissioner Brennan. Any objection to the unanimous roll call? Seeing none, the commission has approved the consent.
Next item up is item 20A, and this is a request for extension of time to consider the City of Oxnard's Local Coastal Program Amendment 1-10. The city is proposing amendments LCP to modify the Mandalay Bay specific plan and coastal zoning ordinance to allow a school within the plan area. Now, the Coastal Act does provide for the commission to extend the time limit on a LCP amendment for up to 90 days, and due to workload and staffing constraints, staff is requesting this 90-day extension, extension of the 90-day time limit for up to 1 year. The motion to extend the time limit is found at the bottom of the one-page staff report, and this concludes my presentation on this item.
We are on. Do I have a motion? Okay, Commissioner Sanchez.
I move that the commission extend the 90-day time limit to act on the City of Oxnard LCP amendment number OXN-MAJ-1-10 for 1 year, recommending yes vote.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Sanchez, seconded by Commissioner Allgood. Any objection to unanimous roll call? Seeing none, the commission has approved the time extension.
That moves us to item 21A, and I have a PowerPoint for this for this application. First up, I would like to draw your attention to the addendum. There are two addendums, one in a green packet that addresses some issues with regard to a request for a postponement in this case. The applicant was originally requesting postponement, but I now understand, or continuance, but I now understand they're ready to move forward. We also have a separate addendum that was passed out this morning. This is in response to a late letter we received from the applicants yesterday, which raises a number of concerns with the staff report and recommendation. And I'll be hitting the highlights here in my presentation. Now, the applicant is proposing construction of a new 33-foot wide, 10-foot-high metal gate on Castro Motorway with 50-foot long and a 6-foot-high chain link extensions on the slopes extending upslope and downslope from the gate. As seen on this slide, the gate is proposed in a remote section of Castro Peak Motorway on a vacant 44-acre parcel located just on the north side of the Castro Peak Ridgeline and just northeast of some communication facilities on Castro Peak. A large area of National Park Service land flanks the subject property to the east and south. Further to the east and coterminous with the NPA land is Malibu Creek State Park. The Backbone Trail is located to the south, and the Castro Crest Loop Trail is located to the east here, which I'll be highlighting in a few moments. Now, as can be seen on this slide, the area surrounding the 20-foot-wide road here consists of undisturbed chaparral and coast live oak woodland vegetation that is part of a larger area of undisturbed chaparral habitat. In 2004, the commission, through a past permit enforcement action on this property, determined the chaparral vegetation on this property is considered to be environmentally sensitive habitat area. And this determination was based on site-specific evidence and biological analysis of the site provided by Dr. John Dixon, the commission's staff ecologist. And there has been no significant change to this chaparral since 2004. Now, seen on this slide, the proposed gate is 33 feet wide. Chain link fence extends 50 feet upslope and downslope of the gate. And pursuant to Coastal Act Section 30240, only coastal dependent uses are allowed in Esha, and clearly a chain link fence and gate are not considered to be a resource dependent use. The proposed fence requires the removal of approximately 2,200 square feet of chaparral vegetation on a steeply sloping hillside. The removal of this chaparral vegetation on a steep hillside like this will result in increased erosion of the hillside and additional loss of Esha downslope. The resultant erosion reduces topsoil, steepens the slope, making natural revegetation in these areas very difficult, and opens up the area for colonization by invasive species. Increased erosion can also result in downstream sedimentation of the streams and drainages, which can degrade water quality and riparian habitats in the area. This fencing will also impede the movement of wildlife through the Esha. And therefore, in staff's opinion, the proposed project is not consistent with the water quality policies of the Coastal Act. Now, the applicant claims the fencing on the slopes adjacent to the road is necessary to stop pedestrian access to the area. He claims that transients and teenagers are vandalizing the communication facilities on his facilities on Castro Peak. However, the applicant has not provided any evidence to support this claim. The Castro Peak communication facilities have an elaborate security system that includes a high fence with barbed wire and video surveillance, and the applicant claims he has not reported any vandalism to the county sheriff because the area is so remote the sheriff will not respond to his report. In any event, we believe there are other security measures that could be employed to deal with vandalism on Castro Peak and those communication facilities other than this large, massive gate. And that brings me to the other issue associated with this gate, which is the size and scale of the gate is out of character with this remote and rural area. Most gates on these rural fire roads are 3 to 4 foot high post and chain or pipe swing gates limited to the road itself to prevent vehicular traffic. In our view, this massive 10-foot-high gate with 6-foot-high fencing would detract from this rugged natural atmosphere and the unique characteristics, which is a unique characteristics of the Santa Monica Mountains Recreation Area. A gate of this size and extent is a dramatic boundary that would render the community character of this area as more urban, developed, walled off, closed in nature, as opposed to this more rural, open community character that it currently maintains. The proposed gate is also in close proximity to public parklands and trails, and again would adversely impact the character of this area and is not consistent, we believe, with the visual resource policies of the Coastal Act. We do believe there are alternatives to this gate as I mentioned before, small pipe, swing gates, or chain and post. And the applicant has not been willing to consider any of these alternative designs. Now, some members of the public have asserted that the proposed gate will adversely impact historic public use of this road as a trail. First of all, this portion of Castro Peak Motorway is a private road, not mapped as a designated as a public trail route. The Castro Crest Loop Trail, as you see here in this slide, makes a turn to the south just before reaching the gate, which is right here. The loop trail takes a jog there. In addition, just for some context here, in a recent Superior Court decision related to a coastal development permit action on a neighboring property involving another gate on Newton Canyon Road, which is this portion of the trail, which is part of that Castro Peak Loop Trail, located just south of this site on a property owned by the applicant. The court found the commission really cannot determine a public prescriptive right exists on this road or use evidence of historic use on a road as a basis to deny the permit for a gate. Now, this is just one Superior Court decision. The staff doesn't necessarily agree with it, because how can the commission protect public access to and along the coast if we can't use historic public use as evidence that the trail is being used by the public, which is quite obvious. In any event, in this particular case, staff believes there is little evidence along this section of the road that would suggest it has been used for public hiking, biking, and horseback riding. Now, that is not to say the people have not used this for those purposes, just that we don't have any substantial evidence that this section of road is heavily used by the public. I would also note that the area to the west of the gate, further along Castro Peak Road, consists of primarily private properties. Now, the National Park Service has submitted a letter raising concerns regarding the gate's compatibility with the natural setting and recommend that any gate in this location should avoid impacts to the native habitat. They also have a concern regarding access to the communication tower they own on Castro Peak. The applicant claims he will provide the Park Service the ability to open this gate and to access their facilities. So in conclusion, the proposed development, in our view, is not consistent with the ESHA Water Quality and Visual Resource Policies Act, and there are clearly environmentally preferred alternatives here to the proposed gate. Therefore, staff is recommending denial of the permit application. The motion for denial can be found on page 3 of your staff report, and that concludes my presentation.
Thank you. Any ex-party communications? Seeing none, I'll call up the applicant. I have two speaker slips for the applicant. If you would come forward, and you can speak in whatever order you wish, but I would like to know how much time you're going to need for your combined presentation.
15 minutes, so we can leave some time for questions.
The questions will come after sure. We close the public hearing. You've been watching our procedures, so I will give you the 15 minutes.
Okay.
Hopefully you won't have to take the whole 15 minutes.
I also have some visual analysis that I want, like, the commissioners to have.
If you will state your name for the record.
Yes, Peter Gonzalez with SC Planners. I represent the applicant. I'd like to start off with this is simply a gate that we're asking for. It is a large in size in order to prevent the consistent trespassers that have historically gone through and passed several no trespassing signs that have been placed for many, many years, have been placed on the entryway to the property line. The applicant would simply like to avoid the liability of having somebody trespassing onto his property and getting hurt and having that liability fall on the property owner. this is a simple gate. It's manually operated. It will be, it is over the Castro motorway, which has been in existence since the early 1900s. This particular property, while there have been quite a bit of a number of trespassers through the property, there have been signs posted for many years. The gate location was carefully chosen. When we placed, if I can show this slide here, the gate location is being proposed about 75 feet away from the Y turn. This Y turn, if you see here in the slide, it was purposely picked in that location for several reasons. One was the location was chosen by our environmental consultant, PCR, as to be determined as the least amount of impact to the natural vegetation. Also, it allowed for both NPS, fire department, and the other fire and emergency access to be able to make a U-turn if needed. Coastal staff raised two major concerns regarding the loss of ESHA and the visual impacts to the area. The applicant submitted a report from PCR, the environmental consultant, that conducted several site visits, and concluded that this area had no significant value. Where we're actually putting the gate, there's not a lot going on. We are only extending the gate, like staff said, 50 feet on either side. This is to prevent people from accessing and trespassing to the property. The reason why a simple post and chain will not work is people are ignoring it. They're ignoring the dozens of signs, and this has happened historically. They just don't care. They're passing through and continuing on as if it was public property or public land. This is private property. The other issue is the actual size of disturbance is going to be only approximately 1,000 square feet. The actual area of that where we're put is only putting in posts and chain. This is a regular post and chain fencing. We're not using there's not a lot of disturbance going. Very little grading. We're using only hand tools, picks and shovels. There's not any major equipment going to be used. And it's not, vegetation's not going to actually be removed. We're going to be placing the posts in key locations so that we can avoid and move around any major vegetation. Or there's also no oak trees near this specific location. excuse me. In regards to the visual impacts, I personally walked and hiked through the property to the different locations mentioned through staff. If you guys notice our visual analysis sheet here, we took a cross section from several locations on the which are public locations that were mentioned by staff. The cross section shows that it's not possible to see the gate. The terrain does not let you see it here's a small video from Google Earth that shows the position from the view as from the north. This is showing where it's coming from, mostly from the Backbone Trail. It's not possible to see it from both the Backbone Trail or anywhere in the northern part of the property. It sits at a lower, the gate's location sits at a lower elevation than the Backbone Trail. Here we're showing from Newton Motorway. It's going to be, it'll zoom in here. This is a location here showing actually on Newton Motorway, and it indicates that how the elevation is clearly shown that you cannot see it from the south. As the video continues, I've also placed at the same elevation as a hiker would be on the Backbone Trail. And this particular next scene here shows where what the view would be like. Here's from the Backbone Trail. You cannot see the gate. I'm going to fast forward this to the next slide. Here's a view from the north area, the northern part. Looking, there is, if you look from in the same sheet, you can see that there is public lands, APN number 4464019901. Showing the video, you could also see, I can fast forward this a little bit. I try to give an idea so the commissioners can really understand what exactly is happening here. This is a rugged area with many mountaintops, and it's just simply not possible to be seen from the south, north. So this is actually coming down and from just showing how you have this other mountain range right in here, and you cannot see the gate location. I'm going to go to the next slide here. Here's showing from the east. Now, this particular east, they point out in the staff report, points out, they mentioned Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy land, APN numbers 4464022904 and 4464019900. These parcels are landlocked to the public. The public cannot access these properties. They would be trespassing through multiple private properties in order to access these land. These are public owned, or they're owned by the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy, but they are not they're not accessible by the public. And yet again, they're not able to be seen. The elevation again will not allow the view of the gates from these locations either. Here it is from another portion of on Castro Motorway. And here's another farther shot so that the commissioners can really understand what exactly is the terrain happening where this particular trail is. There's one particular area. This is the same slide, the same location that was in the staff report that the staff mentioned. If you notice, the Y turn here is actually on private property. The property line is approximately about past where the photo is shown, which if I play the video, I'm going to stop it here so you can see where the property line actually will end. It is not possible to come right here. I'll stop it there. So a hiker that comes from on public land has to go onto the private property in order to continue back onto public land. There is no way, absolutely no way, that a hiker can go on to and continue on the hike without trespassing on private property. And they must go onto our property and back out again. This is one of the reasons, and people don't passing and several signs passing saying that you're coming up onto private property. This particular was one of the areas that they met that staff had mentioned in regards to visual impacts. The only way that you could see the gates from this location from private land and would if the hiker were to leave, get off the trail, and climb onto boulders to be able to get a high elevation to be able to see that.
I just want to warn you that.
Understood. I'm going to sum it up here with showing the last slide, just indicating that even from the public land, the hiker would have to get out of his way and climb to a higher elevation to be able to see the gates from this location. Again, I want to remind the commissioners, we're asking for to protect private property. This is our right, in order not to allow people to just simply trespass. That has been historically done, doing so. And I'd like to conclude with that. Thank you so much.
And if you would state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Joanne Noss. I'm attorney for the applicant. I appreciate your time and your consideration in, as well as staff's work in completing the analysis for this application. I'll make this fairly quick. I know I don't have too much time, but my concern is for my client's property rights. It's a fundamental right of one's to protect their own property. This is privately owned property. And it's kind of ironic this morning that you heard from PLF as your as our first speaker earlier this morning. And I believe Commissioner Bloom, if I remember correctly, commented and asked whether, in fact, the PLF had evidence that the commission was somehow advocating trespassing. What we have here in this exact situation with my client and the application for a gate to protect his property and the refusal to grant this application or recommend granting this application with the admission of letters from the trespassers themselves. In the file, we have the letters from the at least two. We get dozens a week, two of which have taken it upon themselves to write in to advocate the continued trespassing over this private property. If the commission chooses to deny this application, there is an implied and tacit acknowledgement that it's okay to trespass over one's own land, over somebody else's land. And it's also very contrary to the LTWR versus California Coastal Commission. I believe staff referenced it. It's not a Superior Court case. It's an California Appellate Court case that the commission does not have the right to grant an easement over somebody else's private property. That's what's effectively happening here by telling this landowner that he cannot protect his property, he cannot put a gate up to preclude these trespassers who are admittedly hiking, biking, vandalizing. And in doing so, the commission would, in essence, be providing the public with those easement rights. That's contrary to California appellate law. Secondarily, and these are pretty much my only two issues. Secondarily, I believe that although staff has referred to the 2004 Dr. Dixon survey, there has been no survey, either a visual impact survey or an ESHA survey or impact analysis done as it relates to this application of this gate on this site. The file is void of it. We look through the file, it has not occurred. And so therefore, we have to look back to LA County certified LUP, which has designated this not to be an ESHA site, included in my packet that I submitted on May 9th. We have included LA County maps that show that this particular site, this particular property, does not contain ESHA. Now, granted, this is not a certified LCP, and therefore the commission may, through its own independent biological analysis, show that there is ESHA. That has not been done. We have submitted, by virtue of the PCR report, independent biological survey indicating that there is no ESHA. So that, coupled with the Los Angeles LUP, there's no discretion here to venture beyond. And I want, in my 10 seconds left, I want to quote to you a little blurb from the Duda versus Coastal Commission, where the appellate court was concerned with the commission's role in looking at certified LUPs in designating ESHA. And it's stated that the issuing agency, the commission in this situation, must have a good reason for ignoring a certified LUP, such as a significant change of conditions. And we just do not have that. I appreciate your time. I respectfully request that you grant this application.
With that, I'll close the public hearing and return to staff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With regard to the report from the applicant's biological consultant concluding there's no significant ESHA here, We believe there clearly is Esha. This is an undisturbed, contiguous block of Esha. Dr. Dixon has been on the site previously in two previous permit action and a enforcement action. There has been no change to the habitat in this area. It is clearly Esha. One does not need a PhD to figure that one out. And staff has visited the site and confirmed that that Esha is still intact in this location. We also visit the site with regard to visual resources, and you can see the gate from the Castro Crest Trail. The trail does meander onto the private property as it loops back around, down onto Newton Canyon. We never said that the gate was visible from the Backbone Trail. It would be impossible to see it. More to the point is the character of this gate is just not in keeping with this rural area. And we are certainly not advocating trespassing onto the private property. We believe there are other gate designs that will minimize trespass onto the applicant's property. With that, I conclude my comments. Oh.
And briefly, Madam Chair, I'd like to address the assertion that LTWR decision is somehow applicable here. The LTWR decision was about the commission's attempt to look at prescriptive rights with respect to a road in this area and gates blocking that road. The LTWR decision did not address Esha impacts. It did not address 30211 or 30213 or 30223, which are the basis for the proposed denial in this case. Those sections were not cited in the LTWR case, and those sections were not addressed in the decision. So while there is a decision about the commission's ability to adjudicate prescriptive rights in this area, that is not what's before you today. Staff is not advocating trespassing in any way, and in fact found in your staff report that the trail at issue here can be accessed without going through where the proposed gates are. And as Deputy Director Ainsworth said before, there are alternatives that would avoid the impacts to coastal resources that are identified in the staff report.
Any other, does that complete staff response? Okay, Commissioner Burke, and then.
I move that the commission approve coastal development permit number 4-10-005 for the development purposes proposed by the applicant and recommend a no vote.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Burke, seconded by Commissioner Mitchell.
It was a tie.
It was a tie, right. And they are recommending a no vote. That will result in the denial of the permit and adoption of the staff's resolution and findings. Commissioner Burke, would you like to speak to your motion?
No, I think it's pretty self-evident what's going on here, and I think the staff has pointed out there are other types of gates which will suit this purpose.
Commissioner Mitchell?
I would only reiterate that I don't think any of the commissioners are advocating trespassing, and I think the staff has done an excellent job, and it was a great report. Thank you.
Commissioner Bloom.
I think from the sound of the applicant's argument, they're advocating for a position that they ought to be allowed to build any fence, which would mean any wall or any kind of structure they want, to impede access to their private property. Staff has taken what I think is the alternative reasonable position that this fence does not comply with the dictates of the Coastal Act. They have not said that no fence would comply. And the maker of the motion, Dr. Burke, made that point. So I won't belabor it, but clearly some fence and gate structure here would be allowable. Staff has made that very clear in both its presentation and its rebuttal.
Commissioner Allgood.
Yeah, I think given what what is troubling to the applicant in terms of trespassing and vandalism, I would urge them to go to county officials and seek some enforcement. Apparently, you have letters admitting the crime, and I would recommend prosecution.
Any other comments? Just a quick one on my part. Just dealing with some of the specific facts. I mean, I'm in agreement with staff and with, and I think they've done a good job. This clearly is Escher. Okay, this is by everything that we have defined as Escher and that we have how we have dealt with Escher in the Santa Monica Mountains. This is Escher. I'd also like to comment that as far as the visual is concerned, to watch that Google Earth, you're talking about the video of cameras from space, okay, and that tells you nothing about what it looks like on the ground when you're hiking, legitimately hiking on the trail that the staff has said you can see it from. And you can't see it from every place, I'm sure that's true, but there are certain areas you can see it from, and the video didn't, you know, given that angle from that distance, when you're talking about the mountains, it wouldn't show anything, but I'm sure when you're on the ground, it does. And then the last thing is that there's a big difference between a certified LCP and an LUP, and the County of Los Angeles only has an LUP, so the Coastal Commission does have the right to declare Escher in this area, and I'm supportive of the motion. Any objection to the unanimous roll call? Seeing none, the commission has denied the permit.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That moves us on to item 21B. I was hoping to move this to the consent calendar, but we received a couple of letters of objection on this item. So I'm going to do a brief presentation and try to whip through this. The applicant here is the California Department of Parks and Recreation. The applicant is proposing some upgrades to the Nicholas Pond Trail to comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act requirements. The ADA improvements proposed here are in response to a settlement agreement of a lawsuit brought against the state parks by the California Council for the Blind and Californians for Disability Rights. The lawsuit was aimed at state park facilities statewide to provide equal access to state park facilities and trails for disabled persons. The Nicholas Pond Trail was chosen for improvements because the terrain here is suitable to accommodate an ADA nature trail through some really beautiful natural and scenic areas. The project is located in the Nicholas Flats Preserve in the northeast portion of Leo Carrillo State Park, which can be seen here on this slide. Now this site was once a historic homestead ranch, an area contained one of the most significant concentrations of Chumash archaeological sites in Southern California. The proposed trail improvements include a new ADA parking space up here, a conversion of approximately 1,900 feet of existing ranch road to an ADA accessible trail, reducing the width of the trail from 8 feet to 4 feet. Construct a new trail here in this area in the yellow, about 1,000 linear feet, and the restoration of this existing trail road here. It also they're also proposing the removal of an existing culvert in the stream and the stream fill with some BMPs with rock pools for stream bed stabilization. They are also proposing the installation of two prefabricated pedestrian bridges over the two stream crossing, and then a new overlook down here overlooking Nicholas Pond. And this is a view of that area. Now, portions of the ranch roads have to be regraded and narrowed to 4 feet. There are minor grading is necessary here to control the runoff and minimize erosion off of the trail. The work may result in the removal of 27 oak saplings, which will be replanted adjacent to the trail should they need to be removed. The applicants are attempting to avoid the oak saplings on the road. Now, the proposed pond overlook is used informally now and has compacted the soil underneath the proposed, underneath the oak trees. The proposed overlook is a small 72-square-foot boardwalk-type design. It's elevated off the ground, supported on some piers. The applicant was previously proposing a larger concrete pad in this area with retaining walls, and staff was concerned that excavation under the oak canopy would adversely impact the larger oaks, and the applicant agreed to go with the smaller elevated permeable deck design, which is more protective of the trees. And although this area has some sensitive cultural resources, the work area testing in the work area indicates that there's not any significant cultural resources, but we do have a condition on there for monitoring by a qualified archaeologist and appropriate native monitor. And this is where the Nicholas Trailhead is, where the ADA spot will be located. This is the road that's going to be converted into a smaller ADA accessible trail. This will be re-restored, this section. This is the design of the bridge, this, rather than that monster there. There is a separate addendum for this item that includes some minor modifications and clarifications of special condition 4 and the findings to enhance the oak tree protective measures and revegetation of the areas disturbed by construction activities. I also have just a verbal change, a minor change for the use of native plant species of local genetic stock. We left out the local genetic stock, and just to reiterate that. Now, your addendum includes a letter from Marsha Hanscom representing the Coastal Law Enforcement Action Network, or CLEAN, and the Wetlands Defense Fund requesting this item be continued to a hearing in a local area in Marina Del Rey. Ms. Hanscom further asserts that the commission has not complied with the 30-day CEQA public notice requirement. First of all, staff scheduled this item as quickly as possible after the application was filed. State Parks is well past their deadline in their settlement agreement, and they're anxious to get this done. And we certainly do not anticipate any significant opposition to this minor ADA trail improvement. In addition, the June agenda is quite full, and continuing this item will just already add to that very full agenda. With regard to the 30-day CEQA notice requirement, we certainly disagree with Ms. Hanscom's interpretation of this requirement and the one Superior Court decision she references in her letter. The commission has received contrary opinions from another division of Los Angeles County Superior Court and from other courts in other counties on this issue. Furthermore, one of the two Los Angeles County Superior Court decisions against the commission on this issue is currently on appeal. The commission's regulations were approved by the Secretary of Resources as satisfying the requirements of CEQA, and do not require commission staff reports to be made available 30 days prior to commission action. Our requirement is a 10-day notice period for permit applications. Therefore, we believe this permit application was properly noticed pursuant to the commission's administrative regulations, and we certainly don't recommend a continuance of this item. Now, last night, I received another letter from Ms. Hanscom about 8 o'clock, in which he asserts that the staff is recommending approval of the permit that illegally relocates Esha and makes a comparison of the proposed trail improvements to the Bolsa Chica case, where the court found it was not appropriate to relocate Esha as mitigation for the removal of Esha to accommodate a large housing development in the Bolsa Chica area. To compare this project, this nature trail project, to the Bolsa Chica case, in my view, is just wildly off base. In this case, the applicant is proposing to approve an existing nature trail to ADA standards. Nature trails through Esha are considered resource-dependent uses and are allowed within Esha under Section 30240 of the Coastal Act. The transplanting of the small oak saplings to improve drainage it will actually narrow this trail down and is appropriate mitigation for the trail improvement. And in the end, there will be more Esha resulting from this project. Therefore, staff is recommending approval of the project pursuant to the conditions in the staff report. And the motion can be found on page 4 of the staff report. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you. Any ex parte communications? Seeing none, I have one speaker slip from the California State Parks, Jason Spahn, who's here to answer questions. So if you don't have a need to speak, that's fine. We're happy. Commissioner Sanchez.
I move that the commission approve coastal development permit number 4-10-036 pursuant to the staff recommendation. Recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Sanchez, seconded by, we got a tie again, Commissioner Brennan. You want to speak to your motion?
No, I think that that this looks to be an improvement, and think that staff did a good job. Thank you.
Commissioner Brennan?
I would only concur, and having spent time in that area and hiked in that area, I think this is a wonderful improvement.
Anybody else? Any other comments? I'm going to agree. This, I think the state parks is doing a great job. That's a lovely area, nice trail, and trails are resource dependent. So I will be supporting the motion. Any other comments? Any objection to unanimous roll call? Seeing none, the commission has approved the permit. What do we have next? Enforcement? We can do that, because then I think we can fold for the day.
Good afternoon, Chair Juan, Commissioners. Item 22 is the enforcement report for the May 2011 hearing. For today's enforcement report, I'm going to discuss a couple of recent developments in four cases that reflect the variety of the enforcement work. In the first portion of the report, I will discuss two cases that were resolved by our district enforcement staff through collaboration with our local government counterparts. Often we have the reputation of not getting along with our local counterparts, and I just want to let you all know that we work very closely with the enforcement folks at the district level and at our local government, and it works very well, and I'll give you a couple of examples of that. I also want to update you on the status of two cases that were resolved through the commission's issuance of cease and desist and restoration orders. Next slide. The first case, which comes out of our Central Coast District office, involves the placement of unpermitted development on the face and toe of a coastal bluff in the town of Cayucas in San Luis Obispo County. Next slide. The approximate location of the property on which the unpermitted development occurred is shown here. For your reference, the town of Cayucas is located approximately 6 miles north of Morro Bay. Next slide. In this case, the property owner placed a substantial amount of rock covered by jute netting along the bluff face and toe in an apparent haphazard effort to address a small slide at the top of the bluff. However, the property owner performed the work without any coastal development permits from the county or from the commission. This photograph shows the subject property in September of 2010. At the time of this photograph, the property owner had begun placing revetment rock at the base of the bluff without permits. You can sort of see the rock piles, the large boulders. During the winter months, the property owner placed a substantial amount of additional revetment rock along the toe bluff face down the coast of the rock that's shown in this photo. We don't have aerial photographs of the entire violation. As you probably know, we don't have a helicopter for the enforcement division to use, and we're reliant upon what aerial photos we can find from other sources. So, but when it was
we'll take the next one out of our budget.
Yeah, I was just saying the same thing.
We don't even have rental cars, much less helicopters.
No,
but
we won't have a budget.
but when it was completed, the violation extended across the entire area shown here and an additional area as well. Next slide. In February 2011, after receiving a report of unpermitted development on the bluff, we investigated the allegation, confirmed that the activity was unpermitted, and further determined that the unpermitted activity had the potential to destabilize the bluff, impact scenic views, impact beach access, and also injure someone on the beach if any of those boulders had fallen. District enforcement staff then contacted County Code Enforcement and the property owner to arrange a site visit and to ensure that no further development occurred without the necessary approvals. Next slide. As the development occurred within the county's LCP jurisdiction, we worked with the county code enforcement staff to resolve the violation and ensure that the development was removed and the bluff restored in concert with all requirements of both the LCP and other local planning guidelines. This photograph shows some of the additional areas affected by the unpermitted development. Next slide. The collective efforts of the commission and county enforcement staff resulted in the removal of all the unpermitted development and restoration and revegetation of the bluff face, including through the placement of new biodegradable jute netting shown here to stabilize the soil, as well as the planting of native species such as creeping Carmel lilac, some of which can be seen here poking up through the jute netting. Next slide. This photograph also shows the subject property with the revetment rocks removed, the new protective jute netting installed, and the native vegetation just emerging. The swift resolution of this violation, which was 3 months from discovery to restoration, was facilitated by the open communication between the commission and county staff and through cooperation of the landowner. Next slide. The next case comes from our North Coast District and involves the dispersal of construction waste onto a coastal bluff, beach, and the ocean as a result of unpermitted burning of construction materials, which actually took place also on a no-burn day. As with the previous case, this case highlights staff's efforts to collaborate with their counterparts at other state and local agencies and the benefits that can result. Next slide. The Blufftop property at issue in this case is located seaward of Highway 1 near Elk in Mendocino County, as shown here. The town of Elk is about 25 miles south of Fort Bragg. Next slide. In January of 2011, the Mendocino County Environmental Health officials notified commission staff that a substantial amount of construction debris had been dumped over the coastal bluff. The coastal bluff is shown in this property. Again, as with the previous case, we don't have aerial photos of the violation itself because our helicopter was also not available on that day. But this photograph shows you the location of the violation and the type of property at issue. Commission staff later learned that the property owner had set fire to a debris pile located at the edge of the coastal bluff, apparently in an effort to dispose of various construction waste materials. The fire grew out of control and the debris pile collapsed over the bluff edge, causing flaming construction waste to disperse about the bluff face, beach, and into the ocean below. Due to the commission staff's participation in the Mendocino County Environmental Crimes Task Force, we participate in a number of these regional task forces. The county officials knew to contact us and reported the incident in an effort to quickly and effectively address the impacts of the waste and obtain our assistance in resolving the violation. Next slide. Staff's involvement in the task force is particularly important for cases in this area of Mendocino because it's more than 3 hours' drive from the commission's nearest office, so we coordinate closely with the locals. In the course of our investigation, the commission staff was able to obtain a few photographs of the construction debris that remained after the state and local firefighters brought the blaze under control. Among the debris that initially fell onto the bluff and shore were charred lumber, pipe segments, a ceramic sink, and a bunch of other unidentifiable construction materials. Much of the debris washed into the ocean, unfortunately. However, as shown in this sample photograph, various wood and metal debris did remain scattered along the beach. Next slide. This is another photograph taken by County Air Quality Management District officials and shows some of the construction debris remaining in the intertidal zone. Next slide. It's just some more metal debris. After speaking with and collecting evidence from our regional counterparts at the task force, commission staff contacted the property owner and instructed him to remove all remaining debris from the bluff and shore and to submit evidence of the removal when completed. The property owner did comply. Next slide. This slide, submitted by the property owner after the cleanup, shows the entire bluff face and beach free of the construction debris. Mendocino County Environmental Health Department staff later confirmed that this photo was accurate and that the construction debris had been removed. We also notified the property owner of potential penalties associated with Coastal Act violations and that prior permits should be obtained in the future before undertaking any development. The swift resolution of this case is, in thanks, due in large part to the proactive efforts of the commission counterparts on the Mendocino County Environmental Crimes Task Force. It's a vital and invaluable source of information in this remote area of the coast. The collaboration with them and the commission staff really provides us the ability to respond to violations occurring in these really remote areas of the coast, and allowed us to resolve this without having to bring an order to you and take up even more of your time. Thank you. And next slide. Now I'd like to update you on the status of two cases in Southern California, both of which involved unpermitted development in ESHA and in which you issued cease and desist and restoration orders. You know, as more of our orders come mature since issuance, we have more of these success stories to bring to you, and it's exciting to be able to report back the effects of the actions that you take at these formal hearings. The first of these cases concerns the clearance of southern maritime chaparral, including the federally listed threatened bigleaf crownbeard, which occurred in this commission's South Coast District. Next slide. The violation occurred in the Hobo Elisa area of Laguna Beach on property commonly referred to as Driftwood, as shown here. The persons responsible for this violation were not, however, affiliated with Driftwood property owners other than through owning adjacent property. Next slide. On April 14, 2010, at a public hearing, the Commission issued consent, cease and desist, and restoration orders to address the unpermitted development, which included clearing of several hundred square feet of mature southern maritime chaparral, including species of the threatened big-leaf crowned beard. A photograph of the subject property taken in 2003 before the unpermitted clearing is shown here. Next slide. This slide shows the subject property in 2007, after the property was cleared to bare earth. The orders you issued required, amongst other things, the restoration of the southern maritime chaparral and big-leaf crownbeard that was impacted during the vegetation clearance, ongoing removal of all non-native plant species from the impacted areas, including myoporum and acacia trees seen here in the background, and the submittal of annual monitoring reports for at least 5 years after the initial restoration work is completed. Next slide. In November 2010, after obtaining the ED's approval of a restoration plan, the property owner commenced restoration and revegetation activities. These efforts included removal of all non-native species, including the myoporum and acacia trees, tree tobacco, and purple fountain grass from the restoration and surrounding buffer areas. The area was then planted with several chaparral overstory shrubs, including bushroot, black sage, buckwheat, and lemonade berry, along with several big-leaved crownbeard plants. In addition, to enhance the return of the native chaparral plant community, seeds of various chaparral species collected from the site itself were broadcast about the restoration area. This photo shows the restoration in February of 2011 after the non-native and invasive plants were removed. You can see the absence of the myoporum and acacia trees in the background. And the chaparral shrubs and big-leaf crownbeards were in the ground. Next slide. This slide shows a portion of the subject property before and after the implementation of the restoration plan. The photo on the right was taken in April of 2011. The yellow flowers visible on the right and in the background are from the returning threatened big-leaf crownbeard. We're pleased to report that the restoration of this site is progressing according to schedule. The property owner has exceeded the requirements of the orders to date, with the heavy rains during this past winter and spring, the restoration is above schedule and appears to be off to a very promising start, including restoration of the threatened crownbeard. We'll continue to monitor this, of course, throughout the completion of the monitoring period. Next slide. The last case I will present comes out of the South Central Coast District and also involves unpermitted development and vegetation clearance in an environmentally sensitive habitat area. This was addressed in an order issued by the commission. Next slide. This violation occurred in the Calabasas area of the Santa Monica Mountains in unincorporated LA County. The approximate location of the property is shown here by the arrow. Next slide. This case had a very long enforcement history, as some of you may recall, but we're recording today on the significant progress of the restoration. On June 10th, 2002, the Commission denied the property owner's CDP amendment request for after-the-fact approval of a substantial amount of unpermitted development, including grading and vegetation removal, for construction of, amongst other things, a lighted sports court, stairway, sand play area and open space easement, irrigation system, water tank, all in an area found by the commission to constitute ESHA. As you can see, the property shown here in its entirety is surrounded by mature stands of chaparral found by the commission here to be ESHA. A photograph of the subject property prior to removal and restoration activities is shown here. To the right of the photograph, you can see the sports court located amidst dense stands of mixed chaparral. Next slide. The unpermitted sand play area, so-called, in an open space easement is shown here. 2 months after the denial of the CDP amendment request on August 9, 2002, the commission issued a restoration order to require restoration of the unpermitted development. The order called for, amongst other things, removal of all unpermitted development, disposal of demolition materials, removal of non-native species from the restoration area, restoration of the site's natural topography, and revegetation with native species. Next slide. This photograph of the unpermitted sports court was taken by the enforcement staff in the spring of 2001, and it shows the stark contrast. Following the commission's issuance of the restoration order in 2002, the property owner sued the commission, challenging its denial of after-the-fact removal, approval of the unpermitted development, and its issuance of the restoration order. In June of 2005, after several years of litigation, the court upheld both of the commission's actions, both the permit and the restoration and cease and desist orders, thereby allowing the restoration to proceed. Next slide. In late 2007, after several iterations and revisions to the restoration plans submitted by the property owners, the executive director was able to finally approve the development, removal, and site restoration plans. Once the plans were approved, the property owners commenced remediation work. After removal of the unpermitted development, the impacted areas were seeded with a mix of coastal sage scrub and native grasses. This combination helped facilitate the return of the native plant community and to enhance soil stabilization. This photo shows the former so-called sand play area in March of 2008, approximately 4 months after completion of the initial phase of the restoration activities. Next slide. In addition to seed mix, the sports court area was planted with various coastal sage and chaparral shrubs, including chamise, California sagebrush, buckwheat, laurel sumac, black sage, and ceanothus, amongst others. These photographs here show the area of the former sports court in November of 2007, shortly after completion of restorative grading and during the seeding and planting of native shrubs. Next slide. This photo shows the former sand play area in May of 2010, which is year three of the required five-year monitoring period. Next slide. This photograph shows the area of the former sports court during the same period. As you can see, the yellow flowering deerweed is the predominant coastal sage scrub species in the area. Next slide. To accelerate the return of the chaparral overstory, commission staff suggested that the property owners plant additional chaparral shrubs in the area of the former sports court. The property owner agreed and planted 10 additional big pod ceanothus shrubs. This photograph shows the area where the big pod ceanothus shrubs were planted. Next slide. The commission staff is pleased to report that the restoration order has progressed in conformance with the restoration order and the plans approved there too. This slide shows some before and after shots of several areas of the unpermitted development. We appreciate the cooperation and diligence of the property owners in seeing the effort through, and we will continue to monitor the site over the next few years to ensure that the progress continues and the restoration is fully completed. That concludes the enforcement report for this month, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you for that, and thank you for all of the good work that you do.
Thank you.
And it is nice to get these reports and to see the successes. Commissioner Brennan?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question for staff, and I'm not saying it occurred in these occasions, but obviously once a year, I know the counties and cities send out requests for clearance of brush around homes. And generally speaking, most of the native stuff is probably okay and doesn't catch fire, but I'm just wondering, how do we deal with an issue if some of this is ESHA? And, you know, are they caught between the bind of fire requiring them to clear and us saying, hey, you can't do it? I'm just curious, not saying it occurred in these cases, but how do we deal with an issue like that?
It's definitely an issue that we have been dealing with, and it's one of the areas that we have been working on coordination with local governments. In that first case where I showed you where they did clear it ostensibly for fuel modification, there's a specific ordinance that allows the native plants to remain. The native plants actually are much more fire resistant and retardant than the non-natives that crop up in their stead, and so they're actually accepted, especially the low-lying ones. And so that was I think it was a misapplication of a fire clearance, and the ultimate restoration area that we've put in place will be more fire retardant than it was after the clearance.
And I would just add that you know, we're making efforts to deal with it through LCP planning in advance, so identifying standards and when it may be appropriate or not to do brush clearance as well as protect ESHA. So that's, in the ideal world, you're dealing with it in an LCP or permitting context, so that Lisa doesn't have to deal with it.
Right. Well, and in particular, when there's an endangered species, right, in this area where there has, when there have been fire clearance done pursuant, you know, appropriately under the applicable rules, they flagged the crown beard and not cleared around it because it obviously is an endangered species and is not a fire risk at all. It's low growing.
Great. Well, thank you. I certainly will carry that back to some of the folks that had some questions, I know, on a local level. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, I think that's it for today. So we're going to adjourn.
Okay.
And we'll be back tomorrow.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.